So, man, oh, man, a lot to get to. It has been a busy week between Groundhog Day and the State of the Union and the computer's not working and me losing my temper 12 seconds into the program. So a lot going on.
We've got our experts on the case.
I understand we do, and I know our engineers are crack staff, so we should have it all figured out. I was just punching it with my finger.
Everyone in the world, everyone listening, has had a computer problem.
Of course.
At some point in history.
Yes. No, it's fine.
We all know how it is. Just because you're a big, I mean, heck, look at these big companies, their websites go down.
So somebody texted you, that was a rough start. Yeah, I told you it was a rough start.
You told them not to, that's why they're going to do it. So I might text in right now.
No, I don't blame
and say,
you. And then just see if I can if you can completely spin me off the planet.
Yeah.
If you just, if at some point I just go, F it, I'm out, and just walk. And then you know what happens, be careful what you wish for. I bail, 4 hours of coding. That's, you
wow.
know.
No, but nobody wants that.
I don't know. Somebody probably
Actually,
does.
Some people
you,
might like
I
that.
Know you do, and Mrs. Cody does, and your mom and dad. So
what
there's three,
what
and
we
you
come
is
back,
four.
Come back from every break, this entire show, for the next 4 hours by saying, sorry again about the rough start, folks. Just to really.
Was that a monkey? Was there a chimpanzee, Lou? What happened?
Yeah,
was
we
that
just
sound?
Opened the cage. The chip is in here. Hang on, I got to get off the mic for a sec while we feed it. Hold on.
No wonder things are going bad. We let a chimp run the controls. How is that different from any other day? Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Yeah. So, again, this is it's going to be a big day. So we've got we're here until 7. Now, if you've gone anywhere lately from I'm traveling on Wednesday. I'm going to the airport. So I will be dealing with security at the airport. The lovely TSA who, you know, we got to stay safe. That's fine. We all have our problems with TSA. Last time I was there, I told you the story of having to go through enhanced screening because I dared to bring some Halloween candy with me. That threw him into a tizzy. It was horrifying. The person in front of me had a salad. You would have thought that we had formed ISIS and we were getting the band back together and trying to get on a flight to New Orleans. It was that bad. But TSA isn't the only place we experience security. I would anticipate that the security up in Minneapolis today for the Super Bowl is unbelievably tight because you've got thousands and thousands of people there in a target, you know, a target where a lot of damage could be done. But it doesn't have to be a huge venue. It can be small venues if you go to a concert, if you go to a Blackhawks game, if you go to any kind of thing, you are going to deal with security. And while I think we could all agree that security is important, we could also agree that sometimes security personnel and procedures are drunk with power. Case in point, our own Cody Goff went out socializing this week, and he's been regaling me with a tale of how security went overboard. Now, I also want to open this up to you, 312-981-7200. We do know the phones work, right? All right, so the phones work. You can call in. If you've had an experience with overzealous security and you want to share, that's fine. So first of all, here's your problem. You went to an EDM show, right?
Yeah.
That electronic dance, unga, 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 that kind of stuff?
That's what I do.
That you just go and you dubstep and you listen to this pulsating music that you think I'm mad because of the computer breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if I listened to 2 hours of I would be on a homicidal rampage.
Or come back from every break today with dubstep.
Please do. Listen. All right. So you went to a dubstep concert.
I'm pulling up Grammatic right now. Yeah, it's Grammatic with a K.
Grammatic?
Grammati. Oh, gosh.
Is that him?
See, the phones work.
Could it be Grammatic?
Check that out. Hang on.
Is that the chimp calling in? What happened? things are going all crazy. So you went to see Grammatic. And this is a well-known EDM artist.
Come on, a good EDM artist. It was a killer set. It was one of the best EDM shows I've seen.
All right, for the uninitiated, and I count myself as one of them, so how do you set that? Is it like any other musical composition? Because to me, EDM all sounds the same. And I know I'm not up on it, and that's an oversimplification.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my oversimplification, and I live with that.
Yeah, it's really, and I struggle to even explain it, but there is a feel, and it's just the flow of the music. If you're standing there, and you're dancing, and you're kind of grooving, and you're into it, and the transitions are smooth, and the rhythm is just right, it's dropping at the right times, it's really hard to explain, but there is a difference, and I've brought my wife to a bad EDM set, and we left after less than 10 minutes.
Really?
Because it was was so jarring and grating, and the sound was bad, and it was just, like, really robotic and terrible. Grammatic was really good, and it was just, like, the whole time you're kind of into it. And I can't explain it much better than that, okay. And I do agree. On its face, structurally, a ton of EDM is really, really similar, but there is a big difference between a great set and a not great set. And Grammatic was really, really good, but getting into the... Oh, is that...
Whoa, it's the best of Grammatic.
Is this best of Grammatic? Yeah, see, right? And some of his stuff is kind of like jazzy or...
I was going to say, it sounds
hip-hop.
A little reggae-ish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? You can move to that, right?
Sure. I'm moving to it right now.
Yeah.
Out of the studio. All right, so you go to see Grammatic at the Aragon Ballroom.
Yeah.
Or as we used to call it in the day, the Aragon Brawl Room.
See, and I didn't know that.
I'm sure many of our listeners have been to shows at the Aragon and know the Brawl Room. Because it was a very violent place to go. It was known for its fights, its fisticuffs, as well as its musical offerings.
I have seen probably about 10 shows there in the last year, and I've never seen a fight. I've never even seen an altercation, especially at EDM shows. You do think that the music can be kind of harsh and pretty hardcore, but EDM fans are usually really peaceful, and, I mean, if they're on drugs, they're very positive ones. They're showing up on Molly, and they're rolling, and they're in the best mood they've ever been in. I am not advocating drug use, but I'm just saying it's different than alcohol. Alcohol tends to bring out the violence in some people.
Oh, it was known, the Brawl Room, because of a lot of mosh pits at the shows that were there.
That's right. I've seen one or two of those.
Okay. So anyway, go ahead.
But anyway, it's usually a pretty light, pretty happy crowd. Like, I've done the North Coast. I called in from North Coast one year.
Yes, you did.
Nobody's fighting in North Coast.
No, everybody's chill.
It's very hippy-dippy, very chill vibe, right?
Right.
And yet, for some reason, the Aragon decided that, in addition to the 35 to 40 minute line wrapping around the building to get in, that line was actually caused because security had to remove everything from your pockets, they patted every single person down, really? And you had to throw away any open packs of gum or chapstick or any other accoutrement.
How does that keep us safe?
I don't know.
How does my extra that I'm going to chew in lieu of eating or drinking something, how is my sugar-free gum going to cause some sort of altercation?
It was unacceptable.
Yes, that's completely unacceptable.
The security was not, it just felt like you were just violating every person that walked through the door. And it's like, really? So people can go see like an EDM show? Everyone here is 20. Like, no one is here to cause trouble.
Okay, so it was an all-ages show?
I think it was an all... I believe so. Although, I will say most of the crowd was in their mid-20s. It was actually one of the older crowds I've seen for an EDM show. Usually they skew a little younger, but this was... Most of the people my age are a little bit younger, actually.
And what... Did anybody... You can't really question these guys because, men and women, because secure, they're just doing what they're told. But there has to be somebody up the chain who would say, okay, chapstick. What's the rationalization?
Right.
Is it can I set it on fire? Can you light a chapstick? I don't think you can. It's wax. I don't think there's any alcohol in there. I've never tried to light a chapstick.
Yeah.
But I mean, the guy at TSA told me, "Oh, well, you know, a lot of bad things can be molded to look like a candy bar." That's what he told me when I asked about my small Ziploc bag full of individually wrapped fun-sized candy bars at Halloween time.
A lot of things can be a lot of things.
Sure.
Are we as a country just terrified of everything now?
Yes, we cannot. We can't wear shoes anymore. We're all going to have to be naked and just wander into all events naked because that way you will know we're not,
It's not worth it. This is not what freedom looks like. This is not what this country is supposed to look like, where you have to wait 40 minutes to get frisked and felt up just to get into an EDM show.
Yes.
Like a concert.
Listen, what if someone had a some Hubba Bubba and lit it on fire and it blew up and took out a few people? Then would you feel differently?
I get it if they're packing heat, but if they're doing that, then that's pretty easy to spot. Right? I mean, maybe they do a quick frisk up and down, but, I mean, you're not going to hide a gun in your butt or something, right?
No.
I mean, it's...
Well, they're looking for everything else. But also, you know, are these security people trained in all sorts of stuff? No, they're blindly being told, this is what you're looking for, this is what you have to do.
Right.
And it's, you know, where were we the other night? We were at the theater the other night when we all went to see The Humans, which we'll talk about after 5:30, and we're going to give you a chance to go to the Goodman Theater to see Blind Date. But that's beside the point. You know, they didn't do anything to me. because I'm just wearing a coat and regular stuff. Debbie had to open her purse, and they just kind of take the stick and go, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, and there were as many, maybe not as many as at the Aragon, but there was quite a few people in that theater, in the Cadillac Palace Theater. Somebody could have had gum or chapstick or God only knows what.
Yeah.
So why is the EDM audience or the Aragon more of a security risk than the Cadillac Palace Theater?
Yeah.
You know? And why, what's the justification behind some of these items? You know, I worry about it too. I get, and any time I bring this up, people go, "Well, what are you okay with terrorists taking over? Is it, you know?" No, I'm not okay with terrorists taking over, and obviously, I don't want some sort of attack to happen anywhere. But come on.
Yeah.
None of this is really what's going to keep us safe.
Yeah, exactly.
None of it.
Pretty sure the terrorists winning is what this looks like.
Well, and think about the nightclub shootings and all that. They all have security.
Yeah.
And somehow, if somebody wants to get in there and do some damage, they're going to do it. So, you know, do you feel safer because your gum was taken away? No. But does somebody, maybe somebody feels safer that your gum was taken away? But that's just, it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all just like, oh, well, we don't know, we're keeping you safe. Just don't question it, sheep. Just go along with it. 312-981-7200, have you experienced overzealous security? Do you think we're actually safer when people take away your chapstick or your gum? We'll do this, then you can tell me. 312-981-7200. Brian Noonan, WGN. A lot of people texting in at 312-981-7200 said, well, they're taking the gum and they're taking the chapstick because they're looking for drugs, and they figure you can hide drugs, you can disguise it as chapstick or whatever, and so that's... And that could be, but, you know, I don't know for sure if that's the case, but that could be what's happening. 312-981-7200. Kathy is in Orland Park. Hi, Kathy.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm trying to stay warm, thanks.
You and me both. So what do you think of this, Kathy?
Well, they took your candy away, and they took, I don't know if that was your chapstick.
No, it was Cody's gum and chapstick.
Oh, Cody's gum and chapstick. Okay. But yet, how many times has that lady without a ticket gotten on an airplane?
You know what, Kathy? That's a good point.
You know, they're talking about putting her in jail and putting her in a, get her mentally evaluated. No, I think she's awesome. I think she needs to keep it up so that she can keep, so that we have to admit they are not doing their job. They are not doing their job. They either need new screeners or they need to have more training or something. I mean, every time I hear people that are having issues, you know, like with Cody and with many people, all I can think of is this lady is getting on an airplane.
Yeah, you know what?
This lady is getting on an airplane. She, I think we need to salute her and have her do it all the time.
Just to keep, it's like when they run the tests and they show how many guns and knives and all other stuff gets through that TSA missed. Kathy, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Roger is in Oak Lawn. Hi, Roger.
How you doing?
I'm good.
This was at a Cub game of the year against Milwaukee, big series, and there was my granddaughter and everything. So I'm bad. I had to go outside have a cigarette. And if you've been to a Cub game, that's usually left field by the fire department.
Right.
So there's about 100 of us smoking, and when you go back in, you got to empty your pockets and all that thing, and took my stuff out, and I actually had my granddaughter's pacifier in my pocket, threw that on the belt. And I had to ask a lady, young lady, about 25, what, do you really find things, whether it's coming in the ballpark before the game? She goes, you'd be surprised. I said, like what? Guns, knives, box cutters, and she goes, I think you old guys call it brass knuckles and clubs.
But wow.
We just went outside to smoke here on the street here. She goes, well, people from across the street come over and hand weapons to these people who try to get back in the ballpark. And I said, what purpose do you get? I mean, nice family atmosphere. She goes, they either say they always carry it for protection or just in case something happens at the ballpark, which I kind of like, wow, I've been going, I'm sick.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much is happening at the ballpark that you need to carry your knife and your brass knuckles?
Yeah, I was just amazed that she says, yeah, we actually, so many people, we confiscate weapons.
Well, that's, I guess I never thought of it that way, Roger, but I, of course, I don't think I'm going to, you know, get involved in some sort of armed altercation when I go to a baseball game. But that's just me. Roger, thanks for the call. Texter from the 773, I don't think we're much safer at all, especially after the time security actually missed a Swiss Army knife that I forgot to take out of my bag the night before. I couldn't believe it when I found it on the plane. They make you get rid of tons of water, but missed a potentially sharp object. Yeah, well, that is true. Matt is calling from Parts Unknown, my favorite location for a caller. Hi, Matt.
Hello, sir. So I think it was 2009, and I was going to a Bon Jovi concert with a friend of mine, and we got to the theater, the concert venue, and everybody was standing outside. Now, I mean, obviously, we thought everybody was just walking in, but then it looked like the band was coming outside, and we went, uh-oh, it was a bomb threat against the theater that we were going to, and we didn't get he didn't get on until 11:30. Mind you, he played the whole show. We didn't get home until 6 a.m. the next morning. It was great. But, you know, if there's extra precautions needed so we don't all die, then I'm all for it. Because
yeah, but a bomb threat...
People were at a concert in England, and they got bombed.
Right, but that was not in the venue itself. That was out just outside the venue. A bomb threat can be called in by anybody. That doesn't mean there was actually a bomb. Obviously, if the show went on, there was not a bomb in the building. So that's a different thing. And I understand what you say, and I'm not discounting the horror of that was it Ariana Grande concert in Great Britain, but that happened just outside. It's you know, I think we have to be diligent. But we don't have to overreact. Matt, thanks for the call. Finally, let's say hi to Jim. He's in Melrose Park. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, how you doing? I got a pretty interesting one. Waiting for my mom to come in from California on a midway. I'm standing right by where you enter for the TSA. While I was sitting there waiting for her to come out, her plate to get in, people that were getting ready to walk through, I ended up with two boxes of candy. Two or three bottles of wine and a couple six packs of beer that people didn't want to throw in the garbage cans that were there. They were looking around. And I was sitting there and he says, do you mind? Will you want this? Well, I said, sure. I left there with two shopping bags full of candy, wine, and beer because of the TSA.
That's where I'm doing my Christmas shopping next year, Jim. That is brilliant.
That's the spot.
I'm going to sit up.
I couldn't believe it. It was like, this must be my day.
That's terrific. Congratulations.
Yeah, sure.
That's a way to beat the system. Good for you, Jim. That's what I'm doing, Cody. I'm going to take a sign, you know, if you can't get it through security, I'll take it. See what I can come up with. That'll be nice. That'll be how we'll do it. Somebody texted in, oh my God, the Brawl Room, LMAO. I remember those days. It was the Brawl Room beginning in the 70s, before the mosh pit days. Lots of pot smoking as well. Quite intimidating to have a green cloud floating over the venue, as well as the floor slippery with beer when I was a young high school girl. If my parents knew what it was like, they never would have let me go. So see, there's the history of the Aragon.
Oh. And there was weed in there. I mean, there were clouds of weed. So somehow people still got to pass security, which again leads me to just, you know, they're ineffective. They're a horrible just constraint on people's freedom and just it's unnecessary and oppressive. And I'm not going back to the Aragon unless mm-hmm.
Skrillex?
I can't even think of any acts that I would put up with that again. Like, it was that bad.
Well, somebody texted in, you're missing the biggest reason for any of this liability. Secondly, just like with the police, everyone seems to be quick to blame the officers, guards, when this is all on the administration. So, and I'm sure, liability has a lot to do with it, obviously. But, so we only have this to read, and then it's news time. After the news, we're going to meet, this is a fascinating story of a Chicago man who found something that his great-grandfather had written, an opera. We'll share his story on the other side of the news. Well, the Kings hold quarter. Will Levine and the Bulls wrap up their road trip with a W? Bulls, Kings, Monday, 9 o'clock, WGN-TV. 3:30 on 720 WGN. It is time for the news. With that news, here's Pamela Jones. Arlen Parsa is in the studio with me. He is the director of a new film, The Way to Andana. And it is a film that is... based on a very, very fascinating story about Arlen and his family and a discovery. And so, Arlen, welcome. We're glad you're here. Thanks very much.
Hey, great to be here.
So this, I originally read about you in The Trib a few weeks ago. The film has been featured on Channel 11. It's been featured at a number of film festivals. And it is all based on a family discovery. Do you give us a little background about what member of your family, and what was this wonderful discovery that brings you here today?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it was a weird, weird, weird thing. Have you ever done the thing where you search for your name on the internet just to see what comes up?
Yeah, because okay. I'm thirsty. I Google myself all the time.
You're thirsty. Okay.
I'm like a teenage girl, Arlen. I've always wanted to see what's going on.
Well, I tell you what. So my mother did the same thing a couple years ago. She searched for her name. And she searched for other family members' names. She searched for her mother's name on the internet. She searched for her father's name. And she eventually searched for her grandfather's name. Her grandfather's name was Eustacio Rosales. And he was this composer who came to Chicago about 100 years ago from Colombia down in South America.
Wow.
And we had sort of always known that he was this guy who wrote this music, but we had never heard what the music sounded like because he died before, you know, recorded music was a super hard thing. We didn't have WGM back then.
Right.
And so anyway, she discovered something that shocked the whole family, which was that people have been performing this music that he wrote 100 years ago. They're still performing it today.
So that's phenomenal.
The first time that we heard, you know, a song that he wrote in the 20th century was on YouTube. We saw some videos, some people performing it. And it was just like, what in the world? This has been out there, and we had no idea.
So the family knew he was a composer, but you just had never, like, really searched for any of the stuff he had done.
We never even thought to do a Google search, and it was just kind of this question mark in our family tree. And once we saw this video of people performing his music, and we found like a dozen different videos of people performing this one song that he wrote for marimba. It's like one of these big xylophone type things.
Yeah.
And we thought, well, what about the rest of the music that he wrote? And I started asking questions of family members saying, you know, well, what happened to the rest of the music that he wrote? And my aunt basically said, she's out in Oak Park. She said, listen, you should come down to my basement. I got something I think you're going to want to see. And we opened up these boxes, and the first thing in those boxes was this antique musical score from this opera that had never been performed. It was written in the 30s. And I thought, what in the world does this thing sound like?
Wow. So he had written this, and according to the story, your great-grandfather had written this opera and died before it was ever able to be performed.
He died on Christmas Eve 1934. Basically, the family was left destitute. The music went in a box, and it was passed down from generation to generation.
That's amazing. That part is amazing, that people kept it and just kept passing it down, because at some point you'd think somebody would go, eh, it's an old box of grandpa's stuff, where, you know.
You know, there's a story in my family about a flooded basement and panic because, oh my goodness, what if dad's music is gone for good? And, you know, I guess they dusted it off. It was maybe a little soggy or something like that. But, it just kept getting passed down.
Now, does anybody else in your family perform music? Is that why? Because you would think at some point, if there's musicians in the family, somebody would have said, well, let's pull this out and see if we can perform it or at least make some sense of it.
You know, he was the maestro, and he was kind of it. I think, you know, my aunt is a little musical, but she's more on the rock side of things.
Okay.
So and I tell you, Brian, I was the worst person in the world to put on this project because I didn't know the first thing, right?
Right.
I just like, what are all these squiggly lines on this page mean? You mean that we can make music out of this? It was kind of this.
So you have no musical background?
No, I am, whatever the musical equivalent is of having two left feet. What would you say?
Tone deaf. Yeah, tone deaf or just no skill. I'm kind of the same way. But so you find this. Did you immediately, was it titled an opera? Did you know it? How did you discover that it was indeed an opera and that this was the final project of your great-grandfather?
You know? So on the first page it says Andina or Andina, if you pronounce it incorrectly like a Midwesterner like I do.
So Andina,
Andina and opera in two acts. Yeah, Andina, if you want to pronounce it correctly.
Yes,
Andina, if you got the Chicagoan thing going.
All right. So it's an opera in two acts, and you're looking at this, and what was your first thought? What can I do with this? How do we, or did you just say, oh, this is pretty cool?
You know, I was pretty naive, right? I was like, okay, all right, how difficult could this be, right? Maybe I don't know the first thing about it. But, I mean, somebody could figure this out, right?
So you would think.
You would think. So I did the thing that you would do. Let's say you found an opera. What's the first thing you'd do?
I'd sing it.
You'd sing?
No,
well, okay,
I don't know what I would do.
Music?
I would probably ask some of my friends who can read music. I'd say, can you play a little of this for me?
Something I had none like that. Of those at
you
the
don't
time.
Know anybody who plays music?
So, I just did a Google search. How do you put on an opera? And I found nothing of value. But turns out there's how-to guide. There's
really?
No For Dummies
Because there's a how-to guide for everything on the internet. I'm surprised that putting on an opera is not on there
Hey,
as well.
Listen, I should write
now,
one now,
I was going to say, you've done it. Now you can be the expert.
I eventually followed a trail of breadcrumbs from the Google search results, and I found Chris Ramerkers, who's this amazing, brilliant, award-winning conductor, and he basically put together a team of Chicago Composers Orchestra, this amazing group of singers in the Athenaeum Theater here in town, and we put on the show, and it was kind of this multi-year journey to solve the mystery, really, of what this music sounded like.
So you find this, and you decide, all right, we're going to perform Eustacio Rosales's opera,
Good pronunciation,
The Way to
man.
Dina, and how does the movie come about? Because now you've got two things going at once, both of which seem monumentally difficult.
Well, I tell you, the film stuff wasn't as hard because I did go to Columbia College Chicago, did the whole documentary film route.
That was
the shallow end of the swimming pool for me. The deep end was the opera stuff, and it was kind of funny because what happened was, you know, as I was trying to go through this journey, put on this long lost music, things would go wrong for the opera, and I'd be like, oh, the part of me that's trying to put on the music is like, oh, this is terrible, but the part of me that's making the film, I was like, oh, this is good drama for the film, right? It was a little bit of emotional tug of war.
Oh, sure. So when you start this process, once you find these musicians and the composer, everybody who's going to help you, what do they tell you? Were they, because we're going to play a clip in a minute of a music lesson, quote unquote, from one. It seemed like it was difficult because one, it was in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
But music is music, right? Music is universal. So even though the lyrics to the opera may have been in Spanish, mm-hmm. the music should have been easily accessible for these fine musicians.
I'll tell you, while we're working on this project, I was used to going into a room and being the dumbest person in that room because I was the only one who couldn't kind of decipher and have some sense, some hint, some taste of what it would sound like. And so for me, I was kind of blindfolded. Yeah. It was just wild.
What was the biggest surprise for you during this process when it came to, you know, wow, this is what it takes to put on an opera?
You know, I'll tell you, here's my confession. So, I was not ready to like this thing, right?
Okay.
I was not ready to like this music. I'm millennial, right? Young
right.
guy. I got Kanye on my playlist. I got Taylor Swift. I did not have Pavarotti, right?
Right.
So no opera for me. And I was ready to hate this thing. We went in a room, basically, with a group of, singers and a piano player. And I was shaken. I was not ready to like this. And I was shocked because it actually didn't suck.
Okay. Well, for a lot of us, and I'm not an opera fan. For a lot of us, opera has that old that Italian feel. You mentioned Pavarotti. It's big. It's overblown. It's not my cup of tea. But from the
I would have said the same
heard,
thing a couple
yes,
years ago, by the way.
But now the clips I've heard of The Road to Andina, it's a different kind of sound. One, because it was written by someone from Bogota,
mm-hmm.
so it's got Latin flavors. It's got a whole different feel. Was that a challenge for any of the musicians or performers who were probably used to a more traditional type of opera?
Yeah, there's actually a fun scene in the documentary where we had a dialogue coach come in who's actually from Colombia,
okay.
and we had our singers. They were used to pronouncing these words in Italian, right?
Ah.
And so it was like, no, you got to tweak that because you got to get the pronunciation right. So there was a little bit of hiccups along the way, but we managed to make it work.
And you said, how many years was this process?
It was a couple-year process. 2013 is when I first laid eyes on the music. We performed the opera in 2015, and we just finished the documentary. It's out now at andinalives.com.
And you can see it on, it was featured on PBS. You were in, as I mentioned, a couple film festivals. Which was more, as a filmmaker yourself, was there one that was more exciting? Was it more exciting to have the film finally accepted into festivals? Or, I've got to imagine, more exciting to hear your great-grandfather's work finally performed?
You know, for me, I think that one night when we performed the music was just kind of the most magical moment because I was still kind of in disbelief, right? That you could have a piece of antique sheet music that's passed down, it's faded, it's handwritten, that you could somehow turn that into something you can listen to, number one, and number two, that it would be that beautiful. And so it was just, you know, tears were on people's faces that night.
Was it hard to convince the people behind it, the musicians and the composer, to take this project on? How do you, once you find the guy that you mentioned, and you tell us his name again.
Chris Ramerkers.
Chris Ramerkers. Was it hard to convince him, hey, look, I've got a stack of papers that it says it's an opera. You want to do it? Oh, sure, kid. Come on in. Yeah, I'd love to do this opera that from somebody I may have heard of.
Nobody
you know,
had
from
heard
100
of him.
Years
Nobody
ago.
Had heard of him.
So, well, yeah. So, it sounds like Mr. Holland's opus, quite frankly, and I'm sure you've heard that before. Except Mr. Holland was still alive, but now it's Mr. Rosales's opus.
You know, it was a little bit of a leap of faith, and everybody who was on this project was kind of, rolling the dice with us, because mm-hmm. the thing is, we didn't have a recording of what the music sounded like. Usually when you're performing an opera, unless it's an opera that's never been performed before, you're going to have some kind of recording of the piece, right? You can hear what
yes.
it sounds like. The singers can study that and listen to what other people have done. We had none of that. So it was,
So that's good, because you don't know if you're doing it wrong. So it's, whatever you do is right. the right way, because you're the only one
who's ever done it. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, there's something to that, but I think it turned out pretty well.
Yeah. We're going to hear a few snippets of it. Arlen Parsa is with me. He is the director of The Way to Ondina, which is his great-grandfather's opera that they found in a box in his aunt's basement. This is it's an amazing story. His great-grandfather, of course, was Eustacio Rosales, a Colombian composer who had moved to Chicago. This was a piece that was written just prior to his death, never performed. We'll talk more about the process. We'll hear a little bit of it. We'll do all of that after this. It's WGN. Arlen Parsa is here. He's the director of the film. His great-grandfather, Eustacio Rosales, wrote The Way to Ondina as an opera before he died, over 100 years ago. Or he came here over 100
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah.
And you found, just to recap, you started doing some research on your background. You found, oh, wow. My great-grandfather was a composer. This is fascinating. Nobody's ever heard his music. So you find some on Yahoo. Then your aunt says, oh, come into the basement. I got a whole box of his stuff. You find this opera that no one has ever heard, let alone produced, and you start a journey to bring your great-grandfather's work to life, which
yeah.
you do. And it's amazing.
Well, thank you. That's kind of you to say. You know, it was pretty hard going through it, but...
Well, yeah, but now you're done, and you've got something. Not only do you have a project, the film, The Way to Ondina, which you can get download now. You can stream it now. If you go to ondinalives.com, that's where you can order the film and check it out. So you have something of your own. You've also then honored your family and your great-grandfather and brought his work to life. So it's a double win. That's pretty good.
Yeah, for me, it was kind of like filling in this gaping hole in my family tree, right? Nobody ever heard this music. Generations of people had wondered what it sounded like, and finally answering that question was really, really meaningful for me as well as my family.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned earlier that we were talking about, okay, the lyrics were all in Spanish because your grandfather was from Colombia, and some of the singers were having a little bit of trouble making the adjustment from Italian opera that they were used to singing to now an opera that was in Spanish. So there's a little humorous piece. It's a scene in the documentary. But explain who's in this and what's going on.
So in this scene in the documentary, we're basically trying to put together the puzzle pieces and kind of figure out how things fit together. We had what's called a piano vocal score, which is basically what the singers use before the orchestra gets there.
Okay.
And you can sort of... we were trying to do a little singing lesson for me. I have absolutely no singing abilities, but they were kind of trying to show me how to sing a little piece of this opera.
All right. Codé?
These look like the piano vocal score. The piano vocal score is what you would use in the rehearsals before the orchestra gets there.
Looking at this, it kind of feels like it's in a totally different language, and not just because it's in Spanish, but because it's also music, which I can't read.
So let's try something.
Brindo por el amor and mis montañas. Brindo por el amor and mis montañas.
Was that your first musical lesson? It's kind of cool because you don't totally suck.
That's the endorsement you're always looking for. Hey, you don't totally suck. You suck a little, but not totally. There's places you could go up a little bit.
I probably don't have a future career as an opera singer. I'm not going to call the lyric up.
Yeah, man's got to know his limitations, Arlen. That's right. It's good that you tried, and it's very good that you left it in the film so people could see.
You know, the thing about this is sometimes people expect that this is going to be a serious documentary. The truth is, it's a funny documentary, right? People laugh because, you know, it's a fish out of water story, right?
Right.
The most unqualified guy in the world tries to put on an opera. Of course, you're going to have mistakes. You're going to have problems, and people laugh throughout this thing.
Well, if it was a fictional script that somebody was trying to pitch, you'd go, this is a little far-fetched. You know, it would make a good fish out of water story, as you say, but it couldn't really happen. But yet, it did really happen.
It did really happen.
We should go back and pretty much set the tone, because all operas have a story. So what is the story of The Way to Ondina?
Well, it's an opera, so it's dramatic. It's basically
dramatic.
One of these classic opera love stories, right? You have it takes place at the foothills of the Andes Mountains in Colombia, down in South America. You have this young mountain lass, and she's very beautiful, and she has two suitors. And one of the suitors is rich, one of the suitors is poor, as you might expect.
Sure.
So there's a little bit of tug-of-war there. And basically they both sort of make moves on Rosa, and there's some question of which one she's going to go with. And then there's another unrequited love story on top of that. It's not really a love triangle. It's sort of a love parallelogram. They all kind of fit together.
So a timeless story, even though it was written, you know, back at the turn of the century, basically, it can still translate today.
It can still translate today. I will warn you, though, it is a tragedy. Do not expect a happy ending to this opera, but there is a happy ending to the documentary we made about it.
Well, sure, because, speaking of happy endings, let's get to the ending. The night you've been rehearsing with the orchestra and the singers and the composer, and everything is coming together. How tough was it to find a venue? And then tell us about that night. Tell us about everything that went on that night, and how the rest of your family responded to this.
Yeah, I'll tell you. It's funny. In this documentary, you see all kind of the steps and all the mistakes that I make, and one of them is trying to find a venue. And we ended up going with the Athenaeum Theater here in Chicago. It's this gorgeous old historic theater. It was actually an opera house. Mm-hmm. So the acoustics in there are kind of amazing. And I'll tell you, that performance night when we finally kind of solved the mystery of what the music sounded like with a full 50-person orchestra, Chicago Composer Orchestra, just this lush cinematic sound, it was amazing, because on the one hand, I was trying to appreciate and enjoy the music, but on the other hand, I just couldn't get out of my head of like, oh my God, it's finally happening, right? 80 years in the making, this is finally happening.
That had to be. And what was the, you know, your mom had started the search for different people in your genealogy. What was her response? And what was your aunt's response, who had it in a box in her basement for all those years?
There was not a dry eye in the entire house. You know, the audience, we were just crying, because it was kind of, you know, my mother brought up afterward, you know, her mother, my grandmother, the daughter of the composer, the daughter of Eustacio Rosales, she died without being able to hear what this music. She wondered, what did this music sound like? And so, in a way, it was kind of bittersweet, because, you know, there's this great family mystery that's being solved, but not everybody was around to see it.
Yeah, but now it's something that the next generations of your family will all be able to appreciate.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I'll tell you the other thing, too, is we've screened this film at film festivals all across the country, and I think the reason why audiences really connect with the story is because not everybody may have a composer in their family tree, but everybody does have questions that they would love to ask their ancestors, right? I bet you have a million questions that you'd love to ask somebody in your family who lived 100 years ago. So being able to sort of connect with that older generation and start a conversation about preserving your own family history.
Right.
And I hear emails from people who've seen the film who have used it to basically connect generations, right?
That's
grandparents
terrific.
And grandchildren talking about, let's do an oral history project. Let's figure out our genealogy. Let's pass down these stories, these traditions, so that they don't get lost.
Any thoughts on staging it again?
I'd love to. Are you offering? You have an opera house?
Listen, I'm an angel when it comes to the arts. No, I don't know. You know, was this a one and done, and now it'll live on in the film, or is it something that somebody was interested in, and they say, we would like to see this again?
Well, I'll tell you two things. One thing that's kind of cool is on the DVD and also on the streaming, we have bonus features, and one of the features is you can watch the entire opera from start to finish subtitled in English.
Nice.
So anybody can watch this thing now. But the second thing is we're working on basically polishing off that sheet music so that anybody can perform it.
Oh, very nice.
Able to perform it. Yeah.
Is that a difficult task to transpose it now into something that's a little more modern?
I tell you, we found a couple, whatever the musical equivalent of typos is, we found a couple of them, so we're fixing those.
Well, listen, maybe your great-grandfather it wasn't completely done. He was still working on it. There were still some tweaks left to be made. Somebody texted and loved the documentary, really enjoyable and well done. The part we played was great with the baritone teaching you. Fantastic teacher, novel approach. The music was moving and rich. So
that's so sweet.
Rave reviews from the 815. And if you want to stream the film or watch the entire opera, you can go to andinalives.com, and that's where everything is. Again, this was a wonderful story. Congratulations, Harlan.
Well, thank
you. It's really cool. And again, on an artistic basis, but then on a more gut-level family basis to say, hey, this was a dream of someone in my family, and now I've made it come true. So congratulations on that. That's very nice.
It's been a real pleasure.
So Arlen Parsa is the filmmaker. He is the great-grandson. Go to andinalives.com. We will post a link to that, and download the documentary, watch the entire opera. It's wonderful. So again, thanks very much. All right, on the other side of the news, we will turn from opera to wagering. Oh, we're opposite ends of the spectrum there, aren't we? It's going to be a lot of fun. Sam Panionovich is going to join us. You know Sam. He's leaving us. Oh, but we'll talk to him before he goes. This is Chicago's very own 720. No, I got to do this first, don't I, Cody? Yeah.
Chicago's premier podcast collection.
What's going on with WGN Plus? Shypedia has posted episode 3. And Domati and Marsha recap the August Wilson play, Jitneys, along with the history behind that term. Jones and Mike reminisce about the New York Times bestseller, The Secret. And the Mincing Rascals wrap up the week with an avalanche of political news. Oh, where to begin? Check it all out on WGNPlus.com.
All right, listen, I was all wrapped up in the arts. I can't bother myself with commerce. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago at WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Pearl Mortgage. 4 o'clock with that news. Here is Pamela Jones. It's 66 degrees in this studio. It's a little chilly. Now, I don't keep my house much warmer than that. I keep my house at like 69 or 70. But it's a little breezy in here. Even Cody, who normally does not care about my well-being at all, walked through here and went, boy, it's really cold in there. Sam Panionovich is going to join us momentarily. This was, we'll forgive Sam's tardiness because it's his final day at WGN, which makes me sad and happy, all at the same time. It's a dichotomy of feelings, and I don't understand how that works. But we're going to talk about some prop bets. After 5 o'clock, Adam Hoge is at the U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, Minnesota for the Super Bowl. We will check in with Adam, and then at 5:30 we'll give you our thoughts on a wonderful new play that is at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Cody and I, very cultured, going to the theater wearing capes and monocles and top hats. Very, very exciting. We will talk about that. And during that half hour, we will give you a chance to go to the Goodman Theater to see Blind Date. It's about two enigmatic leaders, Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev, and their historic meeting to halt the arms race. You can get your tickets for that at goodmantheater.org. So a lot of that. Do you have any interest in the football match at all today, Cody?
Not even a little. Did you see the t-shirt I'm wearing today?
No, I did not. Oh, you're wearing your XFL shirt.
Yeah.
You're ready to go. You're ready to bring that back. Because as we mentioned last week, this is the official team. This is the show for the XFL.
Yeah.
If Vince McMahon and the XFL are listening, we are your guys right here. We're 100%. We're on board 100%.
Yeah.
We are ready to go. Maybe soon we'll have a mouthpiece in Vegas who can put in a good word for us. I have a feeling that may be so. Sam Panionovich has just walked into the studio, and first of all, I gotta say, you're coming down with all your boxes from your office.
Everything.
First of all, congratulations.
Thank you. Don't make me cry. I already cried this morning.
I heard you cry this morning.
Well, it was more of a whimper. It wasn't really a real cry.
Well, our goal is complete racking sobs. That's for you, by the way.
Oh!
Congratulations. If people don't know, Sam has been, you've been at WGN for how many years? 5 years? 6 years?
I started as an intern August 2012. One of my first jobs here was to work on Sports Night.
I heard of that show. It was good. Good show.
It was a good show.
Good show.
It was a good show.
Then
you, Andrea,
it was torn
some bald
asunder.
Guy. It was, I can't remember who he was.
It was a bald guy.
Yes, a bald guy.
Bald guy, a woman, and a blimp at the first start, and then it
you. Evolved. I think I met you. You were about, you know, an even ton.
Yeah, and I was very large back in the day. So that's how you started as an intern for Sports Night.
For Sports, yeah. No, for Sports in
for
the
sports
afternoon.
For Sports in general,
with
right.
Cap, and then I stayed for Sports Night.
Right.
And then eventually they would have to throw me out because I would never leave. I'd get here early. Stay late, and then eventually became a producer for Blackhawks hockey, Cubs baseball we had at the time.
Yep.
Maybe you've heard.
I've heard. Some people think we still do have Cubs
some
baseball.
Some people still call me in the morning, hey, what time are the Cubs on?
I don't know, you'll have to call somebody else.
Then became a reporter, then a weekend anchor, and now I'm gone.
It's amazing. But see, in your story, and where you go? Let's tell people that, but then we'll get to the moral for all young, not just young broadcasters, but young people in general who want to get ahead in their life. Where are you heading now?
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. You're not going out there to be in Thunder from Down Under or to,
not going to be a dancer.
You're not
going to
help out with a revitalization of Siegfried and Roy. You're not the new Roy.
None of that.
All right. So what are you doing in Las Vegas?
I'll be a host. Actually, I'll have my own show on XM Radio.
Nice.
The station's called VSIN, which is Vegas Stats and Information Network.
Okay.
Their lead talent is Brent Musburger.
I've heard of him.
He's
big time.
The face of the network. It's only a year old. They're growing. They're adding talent. They're trying to find younger hosts to, you know, drive the thing forward. And I'm one of those people. I'm very lucky. I'll have my own deal. In fact, this time next week, you and I are heads up.
Oh, really?
Yes.
We're competitors. Get
we're
out.
We're competitors now. So next week I'll be on 2 to 5 Chicago time. Make sure
nice.
You listen to 720, though, first. I mean, if you're in
satellite
Chicago,
radio.
Listen to the big show.
Now, will they be, will it be one of those things where maybe your show's 2 to 5 and then they'll replay it at another time? Because a lot of, on some of the networks on XM, they do that.
Possibly, yes. And I know, long story short, the lineup was only an 11-hour lineup Monday through Friday.
Okay.
And then a little programming on the weekends. All those hosts that have worked every day since August, because football is an everyday deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, things are changing in football every day. Brent is going on sabbatical for 6 weeks. You won't see Brent. He's going to take vacation.
Taking some time off.
All the hosts are going to kind of scatter around and do different things. So I'm going to be filling in for the first couple months. And then in June, they're going to expand and relaunch a lineup, at which point I'll have my own show.
Now, it's sports-centered, but is it very much on the wagering and the handicapping and that kind of thing? Because now that football's over, you'll go into baseball and other sports?
Baseball, basketball, hockey. We'll start talking football probably in April when the draft starts, and then, you know, the workouts begin later in the summer, June, July. By July, we'll be talking football.
Okay.
Pro and college. But, yeah, we'll be talking a lot of golf. I mean, we're in the whole thing. People keep asking, well, what is it? What type of station is it?
Yeah, what is it, Sam?
It's information for Vegas sports. You know, and when I say Vegas sports, I don't mean the Knights or the Raiders that are coming.
Sports
I mean
book.
The sports betting and that industry, that angle. What is a line? You know, a lot of people don't know. What do these numbers mean? Why are these lines a certain way? So we'll talk about numbers and point spreads and odds and trends. Why is this line 5? What does this mean? Where is the sharp money? Where are the big bets going? For example, tonight's game, the Eagles and the Patriots, there have been seven-figure bets.
Really?
On the game. They're all on one side. They're all on the Eagles.
Sure, because the Patriots were favored by what, 4.5?
It's 5 now. It's bouncing between 4-5. But in Vegas, and I picked the Patriots, and that was on my podcast that I do, because in gambling and in mostly everything, people remember what they've last seen.
Right.
So in the NFC Championship game, the Eagles won by 31, and the Patriots squeaked by Jacksonville. So what you last saw was Philadelphia dominance,
right?
Struggles for New England. So that's why the line, which opened at 7, which means Vegas thought that New England was 7 points better on a neutral field, immediately came crashing down.
Okay.
Because all the money is on Philly, so that's why they have to lower that number.
All right.
Does that make sense? Am I educating
does.
You?
No,
a little
you
bit?
Are, because and I'm one of those guys. I know, like, if I hear the line is this or that, I kind of know what that
means. You know
what
it means, but you don't know why it moves.
Right, and
I don't know what that means.
I don't know all the, you know, 2-1 I get. But when you get into 9-3 or 8, that
well, that's 3-1.
3-1, see? Yeah, look at
that's that Glenwood math.
I don't do math. But you know what I mean. I know the general, but when it gets real specific, that's when I think a lot of people get lost, unless they wager all the time. Now, as a sports guy, you obviously were always looking at the X's and O's and breaking down the rosters. when did you get more involved in the wagering end, which led to your podcast, which I believe is what led you to now your new endeavor?
With that chicken dinner, the podcast, yeah, this probably doesn't happen. I'd say I started having eyes on this probably 17, 18. I had some close friends that used to run numbers, let's be real.
Okay.
They used to take bets and all that. So I learned at an early age what's good and what's bad and what's good to do, what's not good to do and all that. So it's been something that, you know, and I don't know it all by any means, but I'll tell you what, Brian, I'll get a chance to go out to Vegas and our studio is in the middle of a sports book.
Oh, man.
And the guys that are on that studio and in that sports book all the time, they're Vegas wise guys. They've been setting numbers for 40 years.
Jeez.
So they know everything about everything with this industry. So I'm looking at it as an opportunity to be a sponge, go in there, learn more, and be more informative to people that listen.
Let's go back a little bit. It used to be when you talked about sports betting, it was in the dark. It was done in the shadows. Like you said, friends of yours ran numbers. The guys in Vegas were, you know, that was a different kind of seamy underbelly.
Right.
And then, you know, there's always been the argument, well, that's why the NFL puts out injury reports. That's how, why leagues put that out for the gamblers. When did the evolution start, and where do you see this going? I mean, obviously, with a new network on XM, the potential for this to keep getting more and more mainstream is, you know, unpredictable.
Well, in true fashion, let me answer this with a number.
Yes.
Legally, in the casinos in Vegas, the casinos have taken about $500 million on the Super Bowl.
Wow.
$500 million. Now, that sounds like a lot, right? Offshore and illegally, $4.6
billion. Really?
On the Super Bowl.
So, and that's not even counting your neighborhood tavern with your squares.
No, that is. That's illegally. So all the
they put all the illegal in, not just the offshore.
Right. Okay, offshore, okay. Corner Italian tavern. Bakery, whatever. All of that rolled into one, $4.6 billion.
That's amazing.
But the American government is only getting $500 million of it.
And they're not happy about that.
So they want more, and that's right. Why the leagues are jumping in bed. You see, the NBA a couple weeks ago said that they would be down if they got 1% of every dollar wagered.
Wow.
So they want a piece. All these leagues want a piece. In England, believe it or not, you can bet. There are kiosks at English Premier League games. You can go into the concourse, go get a pretzel, and lay a bet. And then the first commercials on the television broadcasts are sponsored by the casinos, Waxby's, you name the casino. The first commercial in an English Premier League soccer game is the new odds. So it is so full scale overseas because it makes money for the economy.
Is there any worry, you know, you think back to Pete Rose and the Black Sox and throughout the year, that once betting and is involved that intricately in sports, that the, and I hate to use this terminology, but the game, the integrity of the game will somehow be tarnished and the whole fabric of society will be torn.
Sure, those worries are there. I mean, but that's part
of
the
rules. But you don't care because you're going to Vegas.
I don't care. It doesn't affect me because I don't have a contract with a league.
Right, exactly.
You know, all these players, Major League Baseball players, they have a union, and this is in their contract. You cannot bet on sports. I mean, especially your sport. I mean, they can bet on football if they want, but they can't bet on their team or against their team. They can't bet on their own sport. So all that is in the language. That question has been asked because now the Vegas Knights are there, but they're pretty good.
Yes, they are.
Because all these teams come into Vegas, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And the Knights at home are unbelievable right now. The Raiders are coming to Vegas. The NBA eventually is going to come there. The doubts and concerns are there, but, I mean, is it worth you as an athlete to lose your contract because you bet $100 on a football game?
Right.
Probably not. So, you know the rules. If you break the rules, you should be penalized.
But that, with that.
Do you mean
much,
like people going I'm up talking, to players
no, no, no. Well,
and shaving?
I'm,
or
yeah,
what?
I'm talking about with that much money at stake. You were throwing around huge numbers. There's an incentive for things to go sideways. There is an incentive for somebody to be approached and said, hey, listen, maybe you know.
Well, it could go sideways now. Just because it's legalized doesn't mean it could go sideways right now.
Sure.
So if the government could take a piece, somebody told me about a year ago, I won't say who it was, he said if this country would legalize two things, it would fix a lot of problems.
Drugs and gambling?
Marijuana and legalized sports betting.
And marijuana's halfway
there. Marijuana's better on the corner. So it's all about the money. Follow the money, follow the dollar, and this is going to be an industry that continues to grow. When there are $4.6 billion wagered on one event, There's a lot of pie to go around.
Sam Panionovich is here, his final day at WGN. He's actually off the clock, but he was nice enough to come in here. We're going to talk a little bit about, since you are the man with the wagers, we'll look at some of the prop bets. Because, you know, we'll get into the more fun stuff.
Here's this packet. Here.
What do you got?
Look at it. There you go.
All right, and you can explain some of these crazy numbers
to me. It's two-sided. It's on legal paper.
And how? There's like 8 pages?
Oh, there's more than that. 16 pages of props.
This is amazing. So we'll get to some of that. And
if you have a question, please.
It's not too late to wager. So if you have a question for Sam.
I won't take your bets, but yeah. I'll take your question.
Allegedly. Why do you have that little notebook out then, Sam? I don't know what's happening.
We'll
talk to more to Sam on the other side. It's WGN. You know, Sam, he's been the host of Preps Plus. He's the sports anchor in the mornings. He was with Dean and Rick and everybody yesterday and this morning and with everybody yesterday. And we now say goodbye to Sam as he heads off to a brand new adventure in Las Vegas. I'm very proud of you, man. You know, I've always enjoyed working with you, especially the holidays, because you are part of the holiday crew, the people who we come in when all the big shots are off on the holidays. Usually we have a cocktail or two. And do our business. But so I'm very proud of you. Congratulations. Let's go back real quick before we get into some of these prop bets and people have some questions.
Sure.
You started saying how you, you know, you started here as an intern and then you worked your way up. And I think it's an important point because a lot of the people here who've known you over the years, that's one thing they keep pointing out. And I think it's important for anybody who's starting in a job. You said you came early, you stayed late, you worked hard, you did, you know, you started your podcast, which was a side project that fed into your main line of work. Is this a work ethic that you came upon when you got here? Is it something that you've had all your life? But would you agree that's what's gotten you to this next step, right?
Showing up is the most important thing, first of all. Yeah. And did I find it here? No, my parents instilled that in me at an early age. If you want something, you've got to chase it and you've got to go for it. And when I got here, because remember, when I went to U of I out of high school, I went there for 2 years and I applied to the College of Media. I got denied.
I love that story.
And I got turned down, and essentially the dean looked at me and said, you know, we don't think you have what it takes to work. You don't have the grades. And, you know, I was like I needed a 2.5. I had a 2.46 or something like that. So I was right there. But they don't look at you as a person. They look at you as
a number.
So I transferred back to Chicago, and that put a chip the size of the Trib Tower on my shoulder. And once I got here, I decided that I will not be turned away again. So it was motivation by, you know, rejection, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, well, a lot of people get motivated that way. Somebody tells them no, you're like, well, I'll show you.
Yeah, but I mean, once I got here, and you were one of the first people that I got to know pretty well here, you know, I would see you Monday through Friday. You know, it was the willingness to have faith in an intern and trust ideas from an intern, because I was always pretty progressive with thoughts and ideas. And, hey, you should, you know, if it was once a week I'd have an idea, you would always listen and take my 2 cents. So it's being progressive and being creative and always trying to, you know, help out, whether it's cutting an interview or putting up a podcast or, you know, pitching ideas. You always have to, you know, make yourself heard, I guess.
Yeah, and as you said, showing up, you say yes. They say, hey, Sam, can you work Thanksgiving?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Can you produce Steve and Johnny overnight on New Year's Eve when you're 23? I don't want to, but damn it, I'm going to do it.
Right, because that's the job. And it's amazing how many people don't think that way. So, again, we're getting a lot of texts. People they know you're going to Vegas. They know you're not going to be a showgirl, which I think is a mistake.
I'm
going to
drive Uber, actually. This is a long con. I'm just going to drive Uber. That's it.
Wow. That would be a sad place to drive Uber.
Cody's going to give me some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn that up.
Listen, he's going to teach you all about cyber, what is it, cybercurrency? Cryptocurrency?
Crypto.
Cryptocurrency. Then you're going to get out there, you're going to invest that cryptocurrency all on black, as Wesley Snipes says. Take your cryptocurrency.
Of course he would bet all on black. A couple texts here, just real quick. I appreciate all the texts. I'm not going to get emotional again. I'm going to try not to. If you'd like to listen, it's on Sirius XM 204. The station is called VSiN. Again, Sirius XM 204. There's also a video component, and there's an app, VSIN.com, and the app is called VSiN, VSIN. So if you listen and you tune in and you watch,
very nice.
Thanks for the support.
Well, congratulations again. Let's do a couple of these prop bets. Now, there's a million prop bets based on the game, and then there's a lot that aren't the game. But tell us, you told me off the air, your favorite game-related prop bet.
And I don't have a take on this one. I just think the number is hilarious. The over-under on Tom Brady's rushing yards.
Okay, what's
this is a bet.
What's the line?
The line on Tom Brady's rushing yards, 3.5
Okay.
3.5 So if you think he's going to rush for 4 yards or more, you bet on the
lay
over.
It down. What's the smart money?
Probably on the under. Probably is.
Because he never runs.
Such a small number. And don't forget, you know, Brady had 28 rushing yards this year. 28 divided by 12.
Not much.
It's about 2.5 a game.
And that's how they come up with these, right? They look at the average and they say, all right, over the course of the season, he ran for 2.5 yards. We'll put it, there's got to be a lot of math involved with going from the 2.5 to say, all right, we'll put it at 4.5.
Well, they want to entice you because 2.5 is too low.
Right.
So they want to entice you. All they're trying to do, all Vegas is trying to do is give you options, make you salivate, and they want split money on both sides. Because if Tom Brady, guess what? If he busts off a 9-yard run, you're in business.
Yeah.
But if he gets sacked then, and I'll tell you what, one time, I think it was a couple years ago, Peyton Manning's over-under on rush yards was 6.5.
Right.
Say he
doesn't run either.
Say he had 8 yards. Last play of the game, what does he do? He takes a knee. Which is minus 2.
Oh.
So he lands on 6.
Now, a lot of people could say, see, somebody got to him.
Right.
Somebody put it in his ear.
Right.
Take a knee.
Right.
Pay a little something extra in the Papa John's box for
you. A couple
you.
Other props for you. The National Anthem, Pink is singing that. The
yes.
Over-under, 2 minutes.
All right. What's the average on that?
Average is 1 minute, 58 seconds.
All right.
Pink also has the flu now.
Oh.
Will that mean she blasts it out and tries to steal the show?
It.
Or does she
condense.
Get through it?
Good bet. What's the line on that? Two minutes. 2 minutes. And all right. Now, let me ask you that. 2 minutes. What are... Does that, because I wanted to ask another dumb betting question.
No,
like,
no,
I'm
no
looking
question
at this,
is dumb.
What will be more, longest made field goal or total points per game? There's a plus 20 and a minus. What are the plus and minus?
Okay, so plus 120 is on a $100 bet. If that wins, you get 120.
Okay.
So it's 100 to win 120. If
okay.
it's minus, you have to risk that to win 100.
I see.
So
okay.
minus 110 would mean you lay 110 to win 100. Everything's based off 100.
Right, but I always find that odd. If I want to win 100, why would I bet 130? It's because I'm not winning more than I've bet. That seems silly to me.
That's the juice. That's the tax, as we call it here in Chicago. That's the price to get to the table, baby.
All right, listen. So we're smart money on the pink bet.
Yes, Mark Money on the pink pad is on the under right
is
now.
Is on the under, all right.
A couple other real quick. I know you got news coming up. How many times will the broadcaster say Janet Jackson?
Oh.
1.5.
I'm going to go with the under on that.
I think so, too.
They're
I don't
gonna,
think
yeah.
they want any part of that.
No, no.
How many times will they mention Tom Brady's age? 5.
I'll take the over.
Probably a good bet. How many times will Donald Trump tweet during the game? 2.5.
Oh, I got to take the over.
I don't think so.
Well, you think he's going to ignore
it? I think he goes through those tantrums in the morning.
That's true. It's pretty late, and he's been out golfing. All right, so smart money go with the under.
Smart money probably on the under there. How long is the longest touchdown? 48.5 yards.
Ooh.
Kickoff is going to be 80, 90 yards.
Right.
Punt return could be longer.
Sure.
Hail Mary?
Yeah. 48.5. Oh, boy.
See, these make you think,
these
though.
Do make you
they
think.
They make you think. And then finally, the last one. My favorite prop of all time. What color will the Gatorade be that is poured on the winning coach?
Oh, I like this one every year. I go with that. What's the yellow?
Lemon lime is
lemon
the favorite.
Lime. That's what I always go with the favorite on.
I'm picking orange.
What's the
There's personal, no smart money
there's
on
no
that.
There's no smart money? No, what's the action? What do I have to bet to win something on
oh,
that?
Oh, the orange is 3-1.
3-1.
Lemon lime 2-1. Red 5-1. Blue 10-1.
Ooh.
Purple 12-1.
We'll go long shot.
Water is 4-1.
Now, wait. I don't know. The Patriots are blue. Ooh,
I'm
going to
turn you into degenerate by 5 o'clock.
Purple.
Yes?
Oh.
Oh, purple. Oh,
Pam's
Pam.
Going purple. Pam's going purple.
Pam on the right. I'm going to write this out in my notebook.
Pam,
hold on.
Pam's going, yeah. Sam will be by the elevator, so he'll be taking all our action. It'll be very exciting.
Oh, finally, one more. I'm sorry. I know you're right here.
Nah, listen.
Who will the Super Bowl MVP thank first? Teammates, 2-1. God, 4-1. The city, 5-1. Coach, 7-1. Owner, 10-1. Family, 20-1.
Oh.
Family.
That's a nice payout, Pam.
Yeah, really. I'm going to have to go with the team, because it's all about the team.
It's usually the team or God.
Yeah, you got to go team first.
2-1, so
yeah.
100 wins 200. But the family, 20-1, that's a nice payout on the family. But why is family last? Why is family below owner?
Because the owner gives you the whole reason to have a family. They give you the money to support that family.
I guess.
All right, well, listen, in all seriousness, I'm going to miss you. It's been an honor getting to know you. You're a hard worker. You deserve everything you're getting. So congratulations. Best of luck in Vegas. We'll be calling you to put some lay some bets down for us.
You got a guy, though.
Yeah, we got the inside information.
You got a guy.
And remember, if you talk to Vince McMahon or any of the XFL people, Cody and I are the guys.
Okay.
Nobody else. We're the broadcast team for this.
Thanks, Brian.
We got it down. Thank you, Sam. Good luck. All right, what do we got? Well, let's do this. 15 seconds, and then we'll get to Pam and the news. WGN. We were going to let you go, but then you had wanted to talk about something real quick. You came down here for some reason with a bottle of mustard. And I know you're, as I joked about, you're leaving with like all your stuff. It's a weird security should escort you out with your box of things from your from the sports office. Well, you've got a rum chata coffee mug and a bottle of mustard.
A bottle of mustard that was given to me this morning as a gift from Amanda Vinicky, who works for WTTW
in
Chicago. She's on Sunday Spin all the time.
Yes, she is.
She knows I love hot sauce.
Ah.
This is hot mustard.
Hot mustard. Chicago Fire Plaquemines mustard. Very
Chicago
nice.
Fire. So it's Tabasco and mustard. It's in there.
Nice.
I've got a clock FM AM radio from Lou Manfredini. Bob Ferguson gave me a money clip.
Yeah, I saw that. That was very nice.
But you gave me the best gift of all.
That is just my friendship
bottle
and my admiration.
Well, that too. But a bottle of bubbly for the holiday crew.
That's it. The holiday crew. Sam would always show up with some sort of beverage during on the holiday shows. Because we know management was not, they were out with their families. And the big shots were not here, so we were able to just enjoy a nice cocktail while we broadcast. So what was it, last time that you poured something on? Was it?
I spilled it over over the instant replay.
That's all right.
Which I think I heard Roe talking about one day. This button's sticky.
Yeah, we.
I just touched the dial.
Like, what happened? Yeah, because if you're listening, they're going to catch you. Do you pay attention to the commercials at all?
I usually don't because I'm usually watching it at a party, but I think today I'm going to watch it at home.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Yeah, I've done it. I've done it all with Super Bowl stuff. I'd like to just watch the game.
That's the thing with me with any big sporting event. When you go to a party, you don't really get to pay that much attention to the game because you're talking to your friends, you're having something to eat, you're drinking, you're doing everything but sitting watching a game. And that happens like during the Blackhawks playoffs runs. People go, "You want to come out to the bar and watch the game?" No. I want to sit in my chair and watch the game. I don't want to be distracted by your craziness. But the Super Bowl, always the big thing with the commercials. This year, and in the recent years past, these companies have started, because they're spending so much money on the spots, they started releasing them early. Have you watched any of the...
I've seen some of the Budweiser ones.
Yeah? How do you like them? The Dilly Dillies?
The Dilly Dilly, I don't like the Dilly Dilly. It's,
no.
It's jump the shark for me. On YouTube, though, you're right. If you watch a YouTube video, some of the ads have already been revealed.
Oh, yeah, they're all out there. I like the Alexa one, where Alexa loses her voice, and then they have all sorts of celebrities doing the voice. So Gordon Ramsay, some guy asked Gordon Ramsay how to make a grilled, or asks Alexa how to make a grilled cheese, and Gordon Ramsay is yelling at him that he's a 28-year-old idiot. The recipe is right in the name of the sandwich. and then I'm trying to remember who some of the other ones are. It all ends with Anthony Hopkins doing a Hannibal Lecter kind of takeoff. So a girl asks, "Hey, can you call Brandon?" "Brandon isn't here. He's a little tied up." And it's creepy. And there's Anthony Hopkins on a chaise lounge for some reason feeding a peacock. But that's all. I haven't seen the Keanu Reeves commercial that everybody's talking about, where he's just surfing on a motorcycle for some company called Squarespace.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, there are a lot of companies that you don't know about that you will soon know.
Oh, sure.
Because tomorrow, you know, there's always that one or two commercials that everybody's talking about.
Well, this year it's going to be different because a lot of the companies that may have gone more political last year are shying away. This year, the only two, WeatherTech is very pro-America, so their commercial is going to be a little more like that. And then there is, who was the other one? Coca-Cola. Is doing a more politically themed one because it's talking about how Coke is inclusive of everybody, you know, a male, female, trans people. So that's the only one. But other companies that usually tend to go a little more political, the marketing experts are saying no, because people want an escape. They don't want to. We're tired of it. We're hearing this stuff all the time, and I agree with that. There's a point where you just go, all right, let's just watch a football game. And let's just watch some goofy commercial, because we know they're trying to sell us stuff. We don't need a message. I get it. Budweiser, yes, you're American. Okay, good. We're going to see the Clydesdales. They're going to make us cry. There's going to be puppies, whatever. I want to see the hamsters driving a Kia. Right. I want to see that kind of stupid stuff. I want to go back to the days where, like, Michael J. Fox was trying to get a Pepsi, and he's caught out in the hallway in his underpants. That kind of stuff.
Cindy Crawford.
Yeah, yes. Remember those days?
Cindy Crawford Pepsi. Well, you go to Michael J. Fox, excited. I go to Cindy Crawford.
Well, sure. I was going to Danica Patrick and the GoDaddy where, you know, you had to then go online to try to get the end of the commercial. It's like, no.
Yeah, you're at home.
And then it's always.
How do you spell GoDaddy?
Disappointing, and your wife is like, what are you looking for? Nothing. What are you Googling in there? Aren't you supposed to be watching the game? Shut up. Yeah, it's going to be horrifying. Cody, do you pay any attention? We know you don't pay attention to the contest, the football match. Do you pay attention to the commercials, the crash commercialism?
No.
Do you pay attention to anything?
Not really.
All right. Do you go online and watch any of them?
I did one or two years, but it's, I don't know. They're not as good as they used to be.
They're really not.
They used to be a lot funnier.
Exactly.
So,
Now it's all
so
about...
did SNL, Cody.
I don't fall into... Now, I didn't see last night's episode. The reviews of it were not good last night. But I think SNL is still doing... They're still doing all right. It's hit and miss. Here's what I watch SNL. I watch from the cold open to the end of Weekend Update. Because that's pretty much the prime real estate. After that, I drift. And especially if I don't know the musical. Like, last week, I watched both musical performances by Chris Stapleton, because he's phenomenal.
He's very good.
90% of the time, I don't know who the musical act is, and I'll give the first one a minute or so, then I immediately go, I don't know who this music is, and I wander off.
The last 25 minutes of the show is... 80% commercials.
Right.
They'll do like a minute sketch and then they have commercials.
And then they show a billboard with a little music.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go away and then they come back with another little billboard and it's all fine.
Yeah, it's weird.
All right, 312-981-7200. Do you even care anymore? It used to be the big thing. Oh, we got to watch all the commercials. I think because the novelty is taken away and they're released early, that people aren't really that caught up in it. Even though people are paying $500,000. For a 30-second commercial. Not people, companies. $500,000. Think of all the wages they could make with that money,
Sam.
More
than that.
$5 million. $5 million for 30. Sorry. $5 million. Where did I just see the thing? $5 million for 30.
It used to be, I think 10 years ago, it was $500,000.
Yeah.
Right. Now it's $5 million.
Listen, I got a lot of things in front of me.
Because you and I can afford $500,000 on our salaries here.
Oh, of course.
$5 million? I don't know about that.
I've already made that the first hour and 45 of the show. we're rolling. Some kid, the other day. So I substitute teach sometimes. So I'm at this school that I'm at all the time, and this girl comes up to me, fifth grade, and she goes, "Hey, the music teacher said that you're on the radio, that you have your own radio show." And I'm like, "Yeah, he's right." She goes, "Oh, then you must be rich." And I wanted to go, if I was rich, why am I here? But I didn't say that. I went, no, I'm not. She goes, "Oh, no, if you're on the radio, you're rich."
And that's not how that works.
Not anymore. No, that's not how it works. Except for Sam. Sam's rolling it because he's been taking numbers on the side. He's been running numbers out of the sports office.
And once I get him hooked up with crypto, I mean.
Man, that's going to be good. That's going to be very, very good. Are you going to go see any big shows out there? Anybody on the agenda?
Not yet, no. Really? I have seen Matt Franco. I went with my dad in October.
Who is Matt Franco?
Matt Franco is at the Link. He's a new magician.
I don't even know what that casino is.
30 years old. Well, there's a lot of new casinos. You know what the Aria is?
Yes, the Aria I know. That I know.
The Link.
Link I don't know.
There's probably 5 or 6 new ones every year, though. I mean, they just keep growing because, as you know, Vegas is going to keep growing. Matt Franco was really good.
Yeah?
If you're in Vegas, go see Matt Franco.
Wow.
He did things that I've never seen before. Which says a lot for magicians, because a lot of these magicians and all the tricks are recycled.
Yeah.
It's branched off of a different trick.
So was it big illusions?
It was illusions, but it was also a lot of physical magic. He had this one trick where he had 500 packets of ramen on the stage, and he had somebody stuff a $100 bill in one of the packets, and he was able to pick it out somehow. I mean, stuff like that, the wow factor.
All right.
Magicians, I guess magic and numbers.
You like both of those.
Probability, cool. A lot of probability. Magic tricks that no way should have ever been performed. He was finding out ways to do it.
Somebody said, texting it already. Matt Franco was incredible.
Check out
Terry Fator, too.
Matt Franco was awesome.
Wow. Now, we have gambling guests on the show?
I'm working on something right now with Pete Rose.
Oh.
In March.
Wow.
To come in and hang out, and we're going to do some video content in the sports book while we watch March Madness together.
That'll be cool.
Pete likes to get wet.
Yeah. Is that slang? That gambling
slang?
That's
slang, yes.
Gambling slang?
Yes.
He's already, next time we see Sam, he's going to have like giant pinky rings.
I'm going to be wearing a jumpsuit.
Big oversized sunglasses.
Adidas tracksuit.
Like, Sam, what happened to you? Nothing, man. He's just lounging somewhere. Yeah, the big velour tracksuit, the chains. Oh, it'll be, you'll forget your roots, Sam. You're going to become all desert all the time. You'll be like Robert De Niro's character in Casino.
Ace. Rothstein. Is it Rothstein?
Yes, it is Ace Rothstein.
Yes.
That's going to be you?
No.
No, I'm looking forward. No,
I'm
going to
be
Joe
Pesci.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, if you're having a big party tonight, you're probably going to order pizza. We've heard the numbers today. Back to the numbers. So many millions of pizzas being ordered today. Some of it is going to be left over. You're going to have some qualms. What should you do with it? I got good news for you. And suddenly I started talking like a character out of Casino. Suddenly I wanted to
listen up real good. Listen.
I want to tell you something. I got a tip for you. It's good. We're good. Even money, you're going to like this tip. 100-1 against you not liking 100. This tip. 100-1. All right, let's do this. Sam is going to Vegas. He's going to wear an Elvis suit. He's going to parachute in. It's going to be amazing. Go see the Veasan.
Come by the studio.
Yes.
The studio is in the sports book of the South Point Hotel. Come say hi.
How tempting will it be to just have a buffet every day?
Pretty tempting. I feel like I'm going to lose.
What are the odds of you eating a buffet every day if I were going to lay that prop bet
How about
on
this?
Sam's
All right,
life?
I'll lay a prop on you real quick.
All right, yeah.
So right now I weigh about 215.
All right.
By October 1st, I'll be under 200. Yes or no? You think
By October 1st? Oh, that's a ways away. Yeah, you'll be down.
I think I'm losing.
You'll be down.
All right, July 1st.
All right, you'll still be down. Because, one, it's hot. Two, there's the stress of moving in a new career. Three, you'll be running all the time.
Four, I'll have free time to actually go to the gym.
Plus, in Vegas, you walk outside, it's like being in a sauna. So there's your added bonus right there.
So you think the under is where the smart money's at.
Right, and you're going to see a lot of adult entertainers and showgirls wandering around the streets. You're going to want to be in good shape. You're a man who's going to be dealing with nefarious characters. You want to be able to run fast. There's a lot going on out there for you. There's a lot. The world is your oyster, Sam.
Okay.
Good luck. We'll do this. Then there's more. It's Brian GN. Would you give up on all your EDM, your promise of EDM, just like you gave up on bringing puppies in this week? You were supposed to have 75 puppies in here for our own puppy bowl. You fell short on that, too. Guy like Sam, if Sam had been my producer, this is why Sam's going out to Vegas to work at a big job.
I know.
And you're stuck with me on Sundays.
Yeah.
You know, if last Sunday I had said to Sam, listen, Sam, I need 75 puppies in here next Sunday. You bet there would have been 78 puppies in here.
I would have got 100.
100 puppies, just the overkill. Overkill.
Well,
which is what we would have had to do with the 100 puppies when the segment was done. Horrifying. That would have been the end of not only this show, but probably the station.
Yeah.
There would have been a lot going on.
That's okay. I played the Russian national anthem this morning. We were playing a game called Guess That Anthem.
Yes, I saw you tweet about that.
And I played the Russian national anthem, and I said, you know, Putin wanted me, made sure he called and said, you know, I had to play it.
Oh, of
else.
Course he did. Yeah.
He called.
He did?
He's got the number.
Well, sure. He's got everybody's number here.
He's got the number.
He's hacked in. He's probably the one texting us right now. It's all these, hey, we love Sam. It's one guy. Cause you played his song this morning. It was like an instant request line. You're a pizza fan in the morning? Cold pizza fan?
Yes.
Good for you. That's how it should be. Cause cold pizza, microwave, any kind of pizza left over is going to make a better breakfast than a bowl of cereal.
I saw that.
According to some new research.
Well, it depends on the cereal.
Well, sure. Like I throw a little plain granola in my yogurt in the morning because, Sam, you know how healthy I am. That's not going to be worse than some pizza.
Or Life.
Right.
Cheerios.
Yeah, some plain Cheerios. But when you get into the Captain
Crunch.
We're
talking the big salad bowl
Apple
full
Jacks,
of Fruit Loops.
Yes, or back when I would do the Jethro Bodine bowl of Captain Crunch back in the day.
Ooh.
Yeah, oh, man, I was a Captain Crunch fanatic. And I didn't care. The more it ripped up my mouth, the more I would eat. It was like, I would not let the cereal beat me. That was the point.
That's how they get you.
I know. They're like, you think you're tough? And I, yes, of course I think I'm tough. I'm going to eat 3 boxes of Captain Crunch. So if you're considering eating pizza for breakfast, good for you. You're going to feel bad about yourself, but don't. As I said, this is good because pizza has a lot of protein. It's got some carbs. Maybe you have some vegetables on there. All good. You're making a better choice than a lot of the cereals because nutritionally, a lot of America's cereals are nutritionally bleak. Except Apple Jacks, because that has apple right in the name, and that's a fruit. That's good. I used to like Apple Jacks. What was your go-to cereal as a kid?
Golden Grahams.
Really?
Golden Grahams.
Those were like after my big kid cereal time. What about you, Cody the G?
Cocoa Pebbles.
Oh.
Sometimes Fruity Pebbles if I wanted to mix it up. But probably the best one is the little toast ones, Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Some good stuff.
See, that's probably after your time, too.
No, well, I had Cocoa Krispies. That was my...
But you didn't have Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
No, we didn't have Cinnamon Toast Crunch. But we had Quisp and Quake, which I believe are still out, but I was around when they first came out.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch came out in 1984. So, no, you would have...
I was alive.
Yeah, you were alive. I know you were alive.
No, I was eating cereal. I just... By then, I was... I wasn't eating too much cereal.
That's when it came out, 84.
Yeah. I used to like eating dry Frosted Flakes. Just the original Frosted Flakes. Like, open the box and just eat it like popcorn.
You'd enjoy that, or you just did it?
Yeah, no, I'd enjoy it. I'd enjoy it. Or, like, when I remember vividly it being at basketball camp at Notre Dame, and we'd take the little individual boxes of cereal so that late at night you could have a snack, and it was always the Frosted Flakes.
I'm picturing him just going either vertical on the box, upside down, or sticking his mitt in there.
Oh, and then when you get to the end of the box, there's just a bunch of sugar at the bottom. It's like a full cup of sugar.
Yeah, and you just pour it on your tongue.
Oh.
And you get jacked.
Yeah.
You're right on both counts. Full-size box, full mitt. Little box, pour it in, because my hand's too big for
the airline box. Yeah, you got to go vert on that one.
Yes.
The airline box.
Oh, yeah, the little tiny
snack packer. It's the size of a playing card.
Box. Yeah, no, that's you just pour it upside down.
You take a shot of that. You just...
Yeah. Yeah, that's why you line them up. Bartender, cereal keep, line them up.
Bartender,
and then they just go
milk.
Down, bang, bang, bang.
Milk!
I have one of those little airline boxes of Wheaties from the early 90s with Michael Jordan on the front of it because my oldest brother was like, oh, dude, here's a box of Wheaties with Michael Jordan's face on it. This is going to be worth some money someday.
Really?
And I still have it. It's like on my bookcase.
What's it worth?
I have no idea.
Nothing.
You want to buy it? Hey, you can hook me up and go to Vegas, right?
He's in gambling, not sports memorabilia.
Help me out. Dude, Pawn Stars is filmed on location.
Correction. I'm in hustling.
Oh.
I'm in hustling.
There you go.
I will deal that box, and I'll deal it before I get there.
Maybe you can get some cryptocurrency for it.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, if I could sell that for some Bitcoin.
You get about a 32nd of a Bitcoin.
Well, that's fine.
For that?
A handful of Satoshis,
you
got to
start your way. Somebody said we forgot the real fruits here, which was Fruit Loops. Again, another one of my favorites, Toucan Sam. Fine. But back to the reason you should be eating pizza. That's the point. And the point is, don't feel bad if you're eating pizza. That's all. There you go. That's enough of that. If you have some pizza left over, just don't leave it out on the counter. Now, I've been known back in the day, after a few cocktails, to maybe just leave my pizza sitting out on top of the stove, getting up later, the next morning, go, oh, look, the pizza's here. And then I think to myself, well, the house wasn't that hot, so it's probably still good. That's a mistake.
No, it's not.
Well, I have to tell people not to eat pizza. Well, you do what you want. This is not a totalitarian state. If you want to leave your pizza out all night and eat it, God bless you. Don't come to me crying if you have some sort of crampage or upper, gastrointestinal distress.
Nothing quite like waking up in your dorm room, rolling over, and finding a box of pizza on the ground.
Oh, the best. It's like
two slices
left. Pizza fairy has come. It's like, oh, my God, this is the best. Yeah, I haven't had that in a while.
What, there's also nothing like waking up, rolling over, and finding a person in your bed.
If they're alive, that's cool. The alternative, trust me, you don't want the alternative.
Trust you.
Going to Vegas, Sam, be careful.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dead people show up in people's beds out there.
Okay.
I'm a guy who used to work in Vegas all the time. I know the nightlife there. I know show people. You're wading into some dangerous water. You'll be fine.
I just want the pizza. I don't care about the...
Do they even have good pizza in Vegas?
Probably
I don't
not.
Think so.
Probably.
Domino's?
Well, I guess in a pinch. I'm sure there is. You'll see, the nice thing is living out there, it'll be a whole different world than actually being a tourist out there. Being a tourist, you don't really go, the locals have their own world. They never go to the strip. They don't do all sorts of stuff. So there's got to be a whole cool Vegas underworld that we don't even know.
By the time you guys come out,
you're going to have it wired?
I'll have it
nice.
Locked in.
All right, tell us what color tracksuits to bring so we don't clash with yours.
Okay.
And then we'll be good to go.
I'm leaving for real this time.
Oh, yeah. See if you can hook me up with one of those jobs as a mascot on Fremont Street. Because I'll buy, like, a Superman costume or something. That seems lucrative. Seems like a lucrative gig. If things fall through here, that's
you could always be the
plan.
Guy who passes out the strip club or the hooker cards.
If you can learn how to do that flipping thing when they... Because have you seen him do it? I mean, well, of course you have. I mean, that's...
Which cup is the ball under?
Yeah.
Which cup is the ball under?
Do the three-card money and then passing out the hooker cards.
The hooker cards are big.
That's.
What are you going to tell your wife, then, if you're a mascot on Fremont? What are you going to tell her that you do?
That...
Show
business. He's in show
sales.
Business.
Yeah,
she's learned to have low expectations.
All right. Once again, congratulations, Sam.
Thank you.
Good luck. We will see you in the desert. We've got to do this, and then it's news time on WGN. Yesterday, if you were listening to The Beat with Mark Carmen and Harry Tynowitz, they were talking to different staff members. And they were saying, hey, who are you picking? And at the time that I came on, only three people on the staff, Dave Ennett, who knows a little bit about sports, Wendy Snyder, and myself, we picked the Eagles. My prediction was the Eagles 28-24. Now, I don't know if that's craziness. It probably is. But that was my pick. So I don't know if you're there. From what I'm seeing as I watch Twitter and Facebook and things from some of the fine Chicago sports accounts that I cover, it looks like there's a lot more Eagles fans in the stadium. But a guy who has eyes on the whole thing, Adam Hogue, is with us. He is the host of the newly refurbished Sports Central, which you can hear every day, Monday through Friday, from 1 until 2 on WGNRadio.com. And he's had a wonderful week for the first week of the new show on Super Bowl at Radio Row. Adam, thank you for taking some time. Congratulations on the new show, first of all.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it. I hope it doesn't get too loud here as we have this conversation because they're getting ready for the national anthem.
Yep.
and it's starting to be a party here. By the way, way more Eagles fans than Patriots fans.
I saw some people tweeting that. Now, I got to ask you, we've heard reports all week of Minnesotans not giving Eagles players reservations, and we know the legend of Eagles fans as rough and borderline criminal. Have you seen any hijinks, any shenanigans from Philadelphia fans?
Hopefully they left all that in Philadelphia because it certainly did look bad, and there are plenty of unfortunate videos that I think surfaced during the NFC Championship game. But, here in Minnesota, maybe it's just too cold here to do anything bad. But, no, everyone's been really good all week, both fans. Everything's been calm. I think these people here, the type of clientele that actually show up to the Super Bowl, maybe a little bit better behaved, I don't know, but I think everyone's happy to be here, and hopefully no one wants to screw that up by getting kicked out tonight.
Now, one of the big, besides covering the Super Bowl, which is, for any sports reporter, has to be, one of the holy grails of your job, you also got to be in Minnesota for, as a Chicago fan, a huge, huge day yesterday. Brian Urlacher inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, first ballot inductee, and you got to talk to him. What was that like yesterday?
Yeah, you're right, Brian. I mean, this entire week has been pretty incredible. And if anyone's missed anything, a lot of these interviews, pretty much all of them, are on WGNRadio.com. You can find all of our Sports Central shows for the week. But yesterday, getting able to be there as Brian Urlacher was announced into the Hall of Fame. Not only that, but being on the red carpet before the NFL honors and talking to guys like Charles Tillman, Greg Olsen, his former teammate in Chicago, and even Aaron Rodgers, who said that Brian Urlacher is the smartest player he's ever played against. It was a pretty incredible night, and it all culminated with Urlacher getting into the Hall of Fame and getting a chance to talk to him. And I'll have more for Brian Urlacher on tomorrow's show on Sports Central as I got a chance to talk to him one-on-one.
You've been to a lot of games, Adam, and I see they're starting to, the teams are starting to take the field there. How is the atmosphere at a Super Bowl different from some of the other big games that you've covered?
Yeah, well, this is my first Super Bowl, and I didn't really know what to expect. You hear the stories that it's a very corporate crowd.
Yeah.
And there's people from all over, and that's true, but there's also 70,000 seats in this stadium, and there's plenty of Patriots and Eagles fans that travel here, especially the Eagles fans. I think the Patriots fans are kind of used to being in the Super Bowl. Many of them have probably already been to some, so they didn't make this trip to Minnesota. But the Eagles fans, it's been a while. Super Bowl 39 was their last Super Bowl where they lost to the Patriots, and they have invaded this stadium, and so far, you know, it's basically like an NFL football game, but it elevated to another level. It's been impressive so far.
Now, I want to ask, I was reading something the last couple days. They were saying that because of the extreme cold in Minnesota, and we as cold as it gets in Chicago, the Twin Cities is exponentially colder, that there was some talk that corporate money was not coming in for all the stuff that surrounds the Super Bowl, usually on Friday and Saturday, and that this may be bad news for Minnesota hosting it in the future. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard anything specifically about money. I will say that the overriding theme from people out here, whether it's media or even some fans, I've talked to some reporters that have covered a lot of Super Bowls, and they've said that this is the worst one that they've covered. We'll see. I mean, the game is different. This is a beautiful stadium that looks out over a great city in Minneapolis. And so I think the game tonight in this setting stacks up with any. But the week and having to walk around downtown, I get it. I understand why corporate sponsors and fans, you know, would much rather be walking to Miami or New Orleans right now.
Yeah.
Personally, I haven't minded. I think this is a great area and this is a great stadium. But I certainly also understand where these people have been to a lot of Super Bowls probably aren't really thrilled with the weather.
Well, I know you want to get to the game. I won't keep you, but give us, as I picked Philadelphia because I like the underdogs and I kind of want to see a city on fire later tonight for one reason or another. But looking at this, smart money probably says the Patriots. Where do you fall on this? What's your prediction?
Well, smart money does point to the Patriots because it's Tom Brady, but I'll tell you what, this Eagles team is really, really good. I got a chance to see them in person in November when they throttled the Bears in Philadelphia. Now, they had Carson Wentz at that point, but Nick Foles has been playing at a pretty high level here during the playoffs. And if Nick Foles plays like he did against the Vikings in the NFC Championship game, the Eagles are going to be in this football game. I think their defense is good. They have the pass rush to get after Tom Brady, and I expect this to be a very, very close game. But once you get into the fourth quarter of a Super Bowl, and we're talking about Nick Foles versus Tom Brady, it wouldn't shock me if the Eagles win. But, come on, I got to pick the Patriots in that setting, even though I don't really want to.
Very nice. Well, listen, Adam, I'll let you get settled in before Pink starts to sing. The over-under, minute 50. Where do you go? Did you think she's going over or under?
I'm going to go under because she's a little sick.
Right.
Right? And so I don't think she's going to be able to hold on to those notes for very long. Right? So it's just, you know, I'll analyze anything. We can analyze
I know it.
Game
no, it's true.
Anthem, but.
Well, that's right. We've got your prediction on the winner and prediction on the anthem. Adam, thanks very much for taking some time. Again, congratulations. People can listen to Sports Central every day, Monday through Friday, from 1 to 2 on WGNRadio.com. All Adam's interviews from Super Bowl week and all the Sports Central shows are on the website as well. Have a good time at your first Super Bowl. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care, Adam. That's Adam Hoge. You can hear him all the time. You could hear it starting to get noisy. It's very exciting. I have no skin in the game for this, but I think it would be cool to go to a Super Bowl once. Two of my brothers went to the last one where the Bears played in Miami, where it rained the entire time, and they still said it was cool to go to a Super Bowl. But I'm not a man of means. And when tickets are like $2,000 the bare bones, the lowest seat in the house, so you're sitting way up there. You're almost at the North Pole when you're going to a game in Minnesota, and you're sitting in the upper deck. Not good. There's nothing I would pay $2,000 to go see.
It's kind of a gamble because if you are invested in one team,
right? Oh, I know.
And let's say you drop $2,000 to just watching it crush. That's not fun at all.
No, this is why my brothers went and the Bears lost.
Yeah, if I'm going to a live sporting event, it's going to be WWE.
Because then you know the outcome before you even walk in. So it's all set.
No, because you can still pull for guys, but at the end of the day, it's about the entertainment. And you know it's going to be entertaining. Basically, no matter who wins or loses, they're going to put on a good show because it's a show. It's not an athletic event. I mean, an NFL game can be really good or really unwatchably bad.
Yes, I know.
There have been many boring, terrible Super Bowls.
Oh, so. I know. Well, hopefully this one is not if you're going to watch. Are you going to... Now, I'm thinking this is the first year in a long time that we will be done with the program and there'll still be a game going on. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go home. I know I'm making dinner when I get home. Am I going to watch the game? Probably not. And does that make me un-American or less manly? Probably both. Probably. Because tomorrow people will say, did you watch the game? I'll go, no. And it used to be easy. Oh, I was working. That was a great excuse. Now it'll be, well, you were working for the first half, but then what'd you do? Well, I went home and watched some romantic Lifetime movie. What? I don't think I want to do that.
Yeah, but the only reason that you should watch it is for the water cooler conversation, right?
But
you're
see,
not, you're not going anywhere with a water cooler tomorrow.
Well, I am. I'm going to school in the morning.
Yeah.
But still, I can in the morning, I can catch all the water cooler moments.
True.
The 10 o'clock news tonight, I'll be able to see Pink sing. I'll be able to tell me about Justin Timberlake. They'll tell me if Joey Fatone came out and joined him. There'll be people upset that Janet Jackson has not been invited back, which I get, sure. I'll get all that information. That's the beauty of it. I don't have to invest all that time. There was actually, I saw something today, and we can talk about this real quick on the other side. Or no, we'll talk about it now, because I have to. I saw an interesting article that, is good. This may be narrowcasting, but it's something good to know if you're traveling out of town anywhere. There was a whole list of things, if you don't know anything about the Super Bowl, where you could still be a good conversationalist at parties.
Wow.
So it's perfect. You know, that tells you who the quarter. All you got to know who the quarterbacks are. When was the last time the Eagles were in the Super Bowl? Oh, they've never won. Last time, 2004. I didn't know that until I read this little cheat sheet. And you know, there's a lot of people doing that. They have a few cursory facts, then they sound like they know. Well, tomorrow I will have some cursory facts. You know, what was that? Your microphone's giving a lot of background noise.
Well, like,
yeah, what's going on?
I feel like that always happens.
Is it the chimp?
It might
chip back in there.
I put him back in the cage.
All right, listen, after 5:30, we're going to give you a chance, as Cody and I talk about the theater, we're going to give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to Blind Date, which is playing now through February 25th at the Goodman Theater. It's about two enigmatic leaders, Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev, and their historic meetings to halt the arms race. You can get your tickets at goodmantheater.org. That'll be after 5:30. If you're heading out, to New Orleans for Mardi Gras or any big event, I'll tell you how not to get arrested. All right, we'll do that after this. WGN. All right, next week we will not be here. And by we, I mean Cody and I. The station, for all intents and purposes, will still be operating. This 4-hour vacancy, I don't know who will be filling it, because I will be in New Orleans, Louisiana for Mardi Gras. It is a very exciting time for me. I get to wear purple, green, and gold, which are, you know, my new favorite colors. No, we're going down because it's our daughter's last year at Tulane, and we've decided we're going to go back. We were at 3 years ago. I went to Mardi Gras, and it was unbelievably fun. Now, I invited Cody, but he doesn't want to come. We have I told you and your lovely bride could come. You could have crashed with us. It'd be a ball. But so we won't be here. And I started thinking, well, I've got I'm going down there now. For those of you who have been following along, I have not had a beer since New Year's Eve. Then I vowed I would not have any beer until I got to Mardi Gras. I'm still good on that. We're still beerless. My wife is trying to get me. She's throwing out the when does the vacation really start argument, where she says, well, once we get to the airport, technically we're on vacation. So are you going to have a beer at the airport? I said, I don't know. She said, well, we've got a lot of drink tickets. Are you going to have a beer on the plane? I said, I don't know. Now, we're landing late at night, so I won't be able to go out, but I don't know. Anyway, I've been thinking about this a lot and about having fun, and then I'm flipping through the paper yesterday, and I see an article, how to get arrested during Mardi Gras. And I thought to myself, well, I don't want to get arrested, but I probably should know what it would take to get myself arrested. Because I know every time I go out of town, Cody secretly believes, I don't know if hopes is the right word, but secretly believes that I will end up in jail. That I will either become a Florida news story or, back in the day, one of Nick's old drunks in the news story. He thinks something bad is going to happen, right? You think I'm going to go on the wrong side of the law, and I won't. But here's the thing. This is what they said in New Orleans. It's pretty easy. What do you think will get you arrested? There's three things. What do you think one of the things that will get you arrested in New Orleans during Mardi Gras would be? What do you think?
Murder.
No, well, okay. Let's take those off the table. Obviously, murder, arson, armed robbery. Yes, those will get you arrested. But a regular party goer, a reveler, say a guy like me who's going to be wearing a velveteen jester hat and a kilt and a lot of green and gold and purple clothing, just wandering about, having my way with the town, so to speak. What do you think? How do you think I could get arrested?
Property damage?
Close. That's not on the list.
Really?
But that's, I should take that back. One of the things is hitting a police horse.
Ah,
so I guess that would be property
there
damage.
There you go.
Because the police commander who's in charge of the area that encompasses the French Quarter and the Marigny and the Central Business District, he was interviewed. And he said, well, yes, hitting a police horse will get you arrested. And I thought, who's hitting a police horse? But it does happen. They say you can pet the horses, and I see the mounted police in New Orleans all the time. So you can pet the horse once you ask the police officer if you can pet him, but you cannot hit or slap one.
So even if you kind of give it a pet?
You can't give it a whack on the hind end.
Huh.
They say every time there's a big event, somebody hits a horse.
Oh, no.
And that'll get you arrested. So, all right, note to self. What I should do is write these on a laminated card and have them hanging around my neck. And the minute I start to do something, I should check the card.
Well, then you can advertise it to others, too. So print it upside down for you, and then write it up for others.
Right. So here, look it. Don't do that. And somebody's walking up to the horse. I go, excuse me, you topless person, look at this. Don't hit the horse.
That's the other guess that I have. Certain types of indecent exposure.
Again, not on this. This list is very cursory.
Really?
Don't punch a horse. Don't hit a cop. And don't fight.
Huh.
Those are the three. And then also, if you don't try to get back into a bar where you were kicked out.
Mm.
So if you've gotten kicked out of a bar, don't try to go back, because they also say that the bouncers up and down the street will be radioing other, going, hey, the guy in the jester hat just got thrown out of here.
Wow.
So don't let him into your place. Then suddenly, you know. Because then it's trespassing, and then you get arrested. But I'm guessing some nudity has to be part of it, unless they just tell you to put your... Because here is the main takeaway. They said, listen, a lot of cities treat you like children. They tell you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. We treat you like adults. Come here, have a good time. Basically, don't be a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll let... You know, we know it's a big party. We'll be cool. Just you be cool.
As long as you don't ruin anyone else's good time.
Right. Don't ruin anybody else's good time. And some certain nudity will ruin somebody's good time. I think I may have told you about the last time we were down there, and we ventured in. We're going to do it again. I told Debbie we got to go to Bourbon Street at least once during Mardi Gras. There was a man who, at my biggest, this guy was about four bills. Body paint. No clothes.
Oh.
Had a little fake shower head. So he and his equally Rubenesque girlfriend, I'm trying to put this as delicately as possible.
Very delicate.
They were both body painted up like they were showering, and it was horrific. Not that, listen, and who am I to judge? But even at my biggest, I would never parade around a thoroughfare in just body paint. Maybe I was a little too self-conscious. Maybe I had body shame issues that kept me from being naked on the thoroughfare.
Let's not psychoanalyze it.
No, let's just say some people should keep their clothes on.
Yeah.
Right?
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's fair, too. I don't think I'm shaming anyone.
But still, they didn't break any rules because it didn't technically ruin anyone else's time.
They weren't ruining anybody's good time. In fact, as disturbing as it was, it did enhance my good time because it gave me a little story to tell, and it made me think to myself, well, look it, I've learned a valuable lesson about how I should or should not comport myself when out in public.
Exactly. So, now, is this underground network of bouncers that communicates with each other, is that part of the larger underground network of law enforcement
yes,
that is conspiring?
Yes, it is all part of the, the Secret Society, the Dark mm-hmm. Society, whatever it is. Yes, it's
Secret
all part
Society of Society. Bourbon Street Bouncers.
Yes, it's all there. It's a dark state.
Okay.
It's a dark state of security.
Wow.
That's it. They're all conspiring to keep our good times away.
A dark bouncer conspiracy?
A dark bouncer state.
Wow. A state.
A state. Dark bouncer state.
I know it's a whole state of them. So,
well, sure. It's the dark state.
Wow.
Of bouncers.
That's...
And I'll be honest. I've been into many bars in the French Quarter. I don't remember seeing... But mostly I go into the little dives that don't have security. I'm not going into the big nightclubs, you know. I'm going into the places where, you'd pretty much take your life in your
hand. You're looking for a fight.
I'm never
that's
looking for a fight.
You are, Brian.
No, I'm looking for characters. And that's the thing. I'm looking for stories. I'm looking to observe the human condition. So I wander into a place, and I'll be wearing my kilt for a lot of, and last time I was in one of the said dive bars, I was violated. I had a Me Too moment.
On Friday, a girl grabbed my butt at the Gnatic Show. That's never happened before.
Uh-oh.
And Casey was right next to me, and I looked. It was not her. And I turned to her, and I was like, Casey, some girl. And there was a girl kind of passing by a bunch of people. It's never happened to me.
How did you react?
She gave it a good squeeze.
Did you?
I don't know. I told her and my cousin. I was there.
Did you call one of the overzealous security guards?
No.
Ever escorted out?
I said, I was like, I don't know. And he's like, I mean, that's going to make you feel good, right? And I was like, I guess. It was weird.
It is weird when it happens.
I have joined the fraternity that you are in of men who have been inappropriately touched by women.
And before you, we're not equating it with anything else. So don't get...
No, because it's okay when it happens to a guy.
Yeah, I didn't care. My wife was a little upset, but hey, just made her think how lucky she is to have
me. I think she was. My wife was a little upset as well.
Of course. Of course they are, because they're like, hey, you're touching my man. And I just say, hey, baby, then you got to lay claim. You got to stake your claim. I sick her right on her. Go get her then. Go get her. Fight. Show her who's the boss. Go show her. Go take your territory back. All right, listen. We're going to talk about theater on the other side of the news, and we'll give you a chance to go to the Goodman on to see Blind Date about Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev. So we will do all of that after the news, which we will do after this. We were talking a little bit about football and the Super Bowl, and Beth called in, and Cody said, you got to talk to Beth. One, she's from Berwyn, and two, she's got a fascinating story. So hi, Beth.
Hi.
What's going on? What do you want to talk about?
Well, in 1985, on Thursday before the Super Bowl, my dad at the time, John, who was 75 years old, came home from work on Thursday night and said, Florence, pack your bags, we're going to the Super Bowl. So they drove to O'Hare, bought a round-trip ticket to New Orleans. They rented a car when they got there. They drove for about an hour and a half out of the city to get a motel because they didn't have a reservation. And they didn't even have tickets. So they woke up on Friday, drove to the city. My dad had made a sign on a cardboard sign on a stick that said, I need two tickets. And he got interviewed on the New Orleans News saying that, you know, because he had his bear sweater on.
Oh, sure.
Saying that he was from Chicago and they just went to the airport, got a flight, got a motel and a rental car, had no reservations, and they wound up getting two standing room only seats. You know how much they paid?
$500?
$100 each.
Wow.
For standing room only to see the Chicago Bears win in the 1985 Super Bowl. And they called me Monday morning about 4 a.m. from Bourbon Street. They hadn't gone to sleep. They'd been out all night long, and everybody everywhere in Bourbon Street thought that it was so cool that my dad and mom were in their mid-70s and just spontaneously went to the Super Bowl.
That's a very cool story. That is very cool. I hope I still have some of that spontaneity left when I get to be that age, if I get to be that age.
My dad worked at a bank, so he was very A personality. Everything had to be in its place, but that's probably the most spontaneous thing he ever did in his whole life, and it was the best story he went to heaven with.
And it worked out well for him. Beth, thanks for sharing that story. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for answering my call.
Yep, take care. I want to be that spontaneous. I don't know if I ever will be. I try. I'm trying to become more spontaneous, but I still do like everything kind of planned out.
That to me is like one of those when the people go to the airport with no ticket.
Oh, yeah. And just, I'm going to get the first international flight out.
Mm-hmm.
What?
That's nuts.
Yeah. What if it, you know?
But same day I want to do it.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
See, I like knowing. I like knowing when we go on vacation, hey, we're going to do this on this day and this on this day. And, you know, even coming up, I'm like, all right, we'll get there on Thursday or Wednesday night. Then on Thursday morning, we'll do this and this and then this. And I'm better at, you know, if things change, that's okay. But I'd like to have, it's like this show. I have the show all written out and planned out. Not what we're going to say, but what we're going to cover. If that doesn't happen, it's okay. But I have that as a, a fallback. I like to have the plan. And sometimes you need plans. I think anyway, you got to have a reservation. If you want to go to a nice restaurant, you got to have a reservation. You know, if you're going on a trip and you say, I want to eat at, you know, well, last time we went to New Orleans, I wanted to have brunch at Commander's Palace. Well, you can't just wander up there on a Sunday on a whim. You have to have a reservation. Okay. So the rest of the day was kind of up in the air, but you had a reservation for that. We had reservations on Wednesday night. We actually had, we had tickets and we were confirmed and we went to see a play called The Humans, which according to the press, the most acclaimed American play in recent memory. It opened at the Cadillac Palace Theater. It is running through February 11th. And I was quite shocked, starring Richard Thomas, John Boy Walton, who did a wonderful job. But it won 4 2016 Tony Awards, Best Featured Actress. It was Best Play. So it comes in with a lot of acclaim. And I had been seeing commercials every morning for it as I watched the news, you know, The Humans. And they, it's hilarious. It's wonderful. And so I was looking forward to this because every other time we've gotten to go to the theater, it's been a musical. Now, we know I've come around on musicals. I have determined that I am, in fact, a musical guy. I do enjoy musicals. But it was so nice for me to go, ooh, hey, we're going to a play, a drama. There's not going to be any showstoppers. It's going to all happen right here. There's going to be some angst, probably. There'll be maybe some comedy. Who knows what it'll be? And it was wonderful. It's all set on Thanksgiving Day in a duplex in New York City. And this family comes to see their daughter and her boyfriend who are living in this duplex in Chinatown. And, they come from Scranton, Pennsylvania. And I don't want to give it away because I will say this at the outset. If you like dramas, if you like a play that is just a play, go see it. You need to go see it. Here's my two-word review: hilarious and heartbreaking. It's also very thought-provoking. Now I will let Cody come into the conversation because he was there as well. I enjoyed it thoroughly. What did you think?
I would say more hilarious and thought-provoking than heartbreaking.
The reason heartbreaking for me is the family is Irish. There was a lot of commentary and things that I projected my own family on. And different family members. So there were parts of it that were very heartbreaking for me. Thought-provoking, definitely, would be number three. If I give it a three review.
And I think that heartbreaking may be your personal experience. If you replace the word heartbreaking with relatable, that's more universal.
Yes.
Because I agree with you that there is no way, if you have a family,
right.
Period, to not go into this and walk out saying to yourself, oh my God, that was my family.
I felt, when I stood up at the end, I felt like somebody had punched me in the stomach.
Yeah.
But that's good. The play got to me. It affected me, which is what good theater is supposed to do. And that all falls on not only the source material, which is, I think, wonderful, but the performances of the actors. Without giving anything away, the final 5 to 10 minutes is one actor in silence. And there is not a second that you are not riveted to that performance. I'm not exaggerating the time, right?
Casey said it felt like a half hour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it was intense?
It's very intense.
Yeah.
It's a long thing. And it's effective.
Oh, very effective.
It's engaging and effective. I actually, the ending was not my favorite part. The rest of it, I loved. The ending, the writing, I think they could have ended it differently. I think that there were other parts where I was like, I wish they would have ended it here. That was my favorite part. The rest of it, I mean, was so engaging. And it was just it was different. You know, it's kind of a swerve.
Yeah.
It's kind of a different feel than the rest of it.
The thing with the ending for us was, on the way home, we were trying to figure out what it meant.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of different quandaries. And again, without spoiling anything, it does leave you kind of up in the air. And Debbie is notorious for hating any ending that doesn't, here's the ending.
Oh, ambiguity.
She doesn't want it ambiguous. She wants her story wrapped up in a nice bow and delivered. And the rest of the play, as you mentioned, is very linear that way. It's, yes, there are twists and turns, but it all is all very relatable. It's delivered wonderfully. So the end, I had trouble with the end because four days later, I'm still like, what did it mean? The imagery of the final couple minutes was, to me, haunting, and I, you know, could picture it. Trying to figure out what it meant based on comments earlier in the production by this character. And then, why did this happen? There were some things that I'm still questioning, which I guess is good that I'm still thinking about it this many days later.
Yeah. We saw a show at the Goodman Theater a few months ago. Don't remember the name. But it also had an ending that was very kind of artsy. Kind of pulls out of a straight narrative. Oh, here, you're seeing what you're seeing. So I think that's a trend, maybe, in more modern theatrical productions or in more modern playwrights. So it's not certainly unique. I don't think I looked at it and said, wow, I've never seen this happen on stage before. I recognize that storytelling device of, oh, we're going to kind of go off and do something symbolic and it's a bit open. So yeah. I think that's something you'll run into with a lot of contemporary theater. But, I think certain people respond to it really well and others might think, I could have done without that. But even if you remove that part and just look at the rest of the work, the writing, unbelievable.
The writing was phenomenal.
I mean, Casey leaned over to me at one point and just said, is that character, is that your mother? Is that based on your mother? And it's just the similarities that so many of these characters had with so many people that you know, in your own family or outside, or it was chilling. I mean, the exact way that it's written is, and it captures the way that people are, was uncanny.
And there was not one performance that didn't feel genuine.
Mm-hmm.
From the grandmother character, who doesn't have a lot to do for most of the production. Very, very relatable. To Richard Thomas, as I mentioned, was the father. Pamela Reed, who, as soon as she came on, I was like, I know this actress from something. She was in Kindergarten Cop. She was in The Right Stuff, Melvin and Howard. She's been around a long time. A lot of Broadway productions and theater productions as well. But for myself, as a guy who, doesn't go to Broadway, I recognized her from the movies. I was like, oh, so she was wonderful as the mom who is just, as you said, an amalgam of just about every mom you can imagine. And then Daisy Egan is the daughter that they're going to visit. She was very good with her own, everybody's got their own baggage, every member of this family. And things are, one thing, and I know I'm not the only one, there was one plot point that you could see coming from the very beginning of the show. The father, news that the father had to deliver. But that doesn't, it was obvious for a reason. It was obvious so I think the audience would know this is the struggle that is running underneath him. I will say the big turn, his big reveal, I didn't see coming at all.
Really?
Yeah, did you?
The father?
Yes, the father's big reveal.
Yeah.
Half of it I did, half of it I didn't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know if we even really said what the play is about so much. You mentioned where it was set.
Yeah, it's about this family that goes to visit their daughter on Thanksgiving. She lives with a man who is older than her, who is, we find out, wealthy.
Yeah, in a way.
In a way.
Everything is very nuanced.
Right.
And it's very not black and white, and it's not heavy-handed. It's not a tragic family. There's no one character who
there's
is...
There's a lot of love and happiness to be together on the holiday, and generational concern and support. But everybody, just like in your family, and my family, and everybody's got their own thing that they're dealing with.
Yeah. It was almost creepy how realistic it was.
Yes.
You're like, oh my God, I'm watching an actual family on Thanksgiving. This is happening.
It's characters, not caricatures.
Very character driven as well.
Right. And from just the way they held themselves, or just Richard Thomas standing there looked like every guy in my family, like every older guy when I was a kid looked like every older guy in my family. Do you think he was wearing a fake stomach?
I don't think so.
See, I couldn't tell. Because, again, it was that perfect...
The dad bod?
The dad bod, because he's thin, but then he had this just, like, basketball stomach.
I think that was his figure.
It could be. But, you know, he was drinking, the character was drinking beer, so the beer belly made sense.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't distract me. I was just like, I wonder if that's really his stomach. Because, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to go, Richard Thomas, we need to fatten you up a little bit for the production. Because he's a blue collar, a blue collar guy. So it all made sense. It was really, the staging was not, I loved how the duplex was depicted there. So you're staring at the stage and you're just looking at the apartment. There's no frills. Very simple staging came out. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and so relatable. Mm-hmm. And they talk a lot about financial problems.
Yes.
And saying, well, I've got to work this extra job, or I've got, oh man, the mortgage is so much, or the payment on this, or the student loans are so much.
I love the line, should it cost so much to be alive?
Great line.
It was like, no, it really shouldn't.
It really shouldn't.
How about the awkwardness between, if you've ever met, well, think of the first time you met your girlfriend or boyfriend or significant other's parents, and the awkwardness of being alone with the dad. And there were a number of scenes between the boyfriend and the dad where it was just like they're trying to make small talk, and you could see them both there, and it was just, again, so real. They're like, oh, I've been in that conversation. I've been in that.
The boyfriend also does a lot of things that are just they're real. And there are these things that you see people of my generation doing and saying that when you see somebody else do it, you kind of think, God, I don't like people that do that.
Yes. Do you have one example? Or?
Yeah, he kind of justifies, he kind of like doesn't want to lose, he wants people to completely agree with him on a point.
Yes.
They're talking about money or economics or where money comes from or how much money one has. And,
yes.
And the dad just says something kind of matter-of-factly, oh, this is kind of how money is. And this, the guy won't let it go. He keeps saying, I mean, I totally agree with you, but you also have to agree this. And it's this nuance, and it doesn't matter. Objectively, it doesn't matter if the dad agrees with this nuanced point.
But exactly.
But this, and I want to say, I know people don't like when I say this, but millennial, like I am, this millennial just won't let it go, and he has to get them to concede this nuanced point. And it's like, this is a thing that you can see people doing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it is annoying, and I've probably done it.
One of the most horrific moments for me was when he corrected the daughter and told her, he corrected his girlfriend, said, you need to be nicer to your mom.
Yeah.
And boy, her reaction was perfect. It was. Again, there wasn't a moment where you went, ah, that probably wouldn't really happen.
Mm-hmm.
Until, again, the more ambiguous ending where you could argue back and forth if that's your cup of tea or not.
Yeah. So as a person who usually enjoys musicals,
yes.
And this is one of the rare forays into dramedy,
yes.
Dramatic theater, I would call it a dramedy.
Just a play, people were calling it, yeah, a dramedy, play? Sure.
How did you feel as an experience?
I loved it. I love plays, straight up plays. So for me, it was great. Everything was, as you said, relatable. To me, honest, there was no moment that was not genuine. I thought the performances were solid all the way through. There's five people in the cast. They were all solid.
Agree.
Two thumbs up from Cody and Brian, Regular Guy Theater Talk.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yes,
too.
Go see The Humans. It's playing now through February 11th at the Cadillac Palace Theater. You can go to BroadwayInChicago.com, get all your tickets. So it was a lot of fun. Now, listen, you want to go to the theater? Sure, you want to go to the theater. I'm going to make it very easy for you. All you need to do is be the fourth caller at 312-981-7200 and tell Cody the two teams that are playing in tonight's Super Bowl, and we're going to send you to see Blind Date at the Goodman Theater. It's playing now through February 25th at the Goodman. It's about two enigmatic leaders, Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev, and their historic meeting to halt the arms race. You can get tickets at goodmantheater.org. So if you're the fourth caller, all you got to do is tell Cody the two teams that are playing in the Super Bowl. Guess what? You're going to the Goodman Theater. Get all cultured and whatnot. Thanks to The Goodman and WGN.
Jill is our big winner. Jill has won a pair of tickets to go to Blind Date, which is playing now through February 25th at the Goodman Theater. It's about two enigmatic leaders, Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev, their historic meetings to halt the arms race. You can get your tickets at goodmantheater.org. She knew that the two teams playing in the Super Bowl were, or are, the New England Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles. Yes, I made it very easy. Brian, why do you make the question so easy? Why did you? Because tonight we just wanted to give you some tickets. We're happy you're listening. We're counter-programming. That's why we brought Roger in, to counter-program. You know,
if ever there was a counter-program.
Yeah, sure. People are watching network news. We're going to counter-program with Roger's news. It's going to be exciting. Good to see you. Look at you in your green shirt.
Why, thank you.
Oh, man, you're so very festive.
This has nothing to do with the Eagles.
No?
No, it just matches my pants.
See, I'm all for the Eagles.
That's all right. I love listening to the Eagles. Great music.
We're going to see the Eagles in March.
No!
Yes. Here's the thing. I debated this, hotly debated going to see the Eagles, because the Eagles were my very first concert ever.
Okay.
At the old Comiskey Park.
Ooh.
I've loved the Eagles. I know people have strong opinions one way or the other. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I'm an Eagles supporter.
There you go.
However, Glenn Frey is dead.
Yeah, true.
So, and a lot of the original, you know, Randy Meisner gone, mm-hmm. a lot of the original guys are gone.
Right.
Vince Gill, who I'm a big fan of, has stepped in. Not to take Glenn Frey's place, but to fill his shoes. Somebody needs to harmonize with Don Henley and
right.
perform some of these songs. And I'm a big Vince Gill fan, but I was like, do I go and support this band that's not really the band I want to see? But I listened to a lot of them. I've listened to a lot of the stuff that they've done, like some specials they've recorded at the Grand Ole Opry and uh-huh. stuff with Vince Gill. And Glenn Frey's son is in the band as well.
Oh.
So I relented, and I am going to see the Eagles. At the
and again, you got to think, do you want to see what was, or do you want to listen to the music?
Well, I want to listen to the music, but it's going to be hard for me to listen to some of the songs that Glenn Frey not only wrote,
true.
But sang
right.
in a different voice.
Yeah.
And now Vince Gill has a wonderful voice. Some would say angelic. I might not be one of those people, but I would say that. But it's going to be different.
Sure.
But still, I if you're that much of a fan of a band, I guess you go and do that.
Well, you just have to support. Go and enjoy it, not compare it to when you saw them the first time.
Well, I was 14.
Yeah, that's like
I was
just
old.
Last year.
Sure.
Come
yeah,
on.
I was young.
You're fine.
Young. I was a young man.
Yeah.
Wearing my Black Eagles t-shirt the next day to caddy.
Ooh.
Sure. Yeah. It's $10 for a concert t-shirt back then. That's mm-hmm. how old I am. $10 for a concert t-shirt. All right, on the other side of the news, how big a sin is it to buy Twitter followers? We will talk a little bit about that. It's been all in the news the last week. We'll do that after we do this on WGN.
Philadelphia Eagles on top of the New England Patriots. Who cares? I only do because I want Philly to burn. Burn. Not in a negative way. I want a happy celebratory burn.
Yeah.
They burn the city no matter what. So if it's going to burn, let's burn happy.
Well, it's going to burn because they put Grisco on the light poles.
Well, that's so the idiots can't climb up. They can't scurry up like rodents.
You know,
so the whole city is covered in petroleum oil and then petroleum jelly. And then we go, whoof. And people are going to call now and go, you know, Grisco is a petroleum jelly. Yeah, I know. It's called poetic license. It's
Thank
called
you.
A little fun, a little comedic license, whatever.
But relax. They tried it last week after, or 2 weeks ago after the playoff.
It didn't work.
It didn't work. Some guy climbs up the ball.
Sure they did. They you know. The man can only stop you from doing so much.
That's true.
The man tries to stop you from climbing a flagpole, covering it with Crisco.
Mm-hmm.
You figure out something that'll latch onto Crisco.
There you go.
You know,
cut right through it.
Listen, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people who latch right onto Crisco. Seen them jamming into their yoga pants. Guys wearing tights. Just horrifying.
Yeah, not a good scene.
All right, did you have a good week? I know you were celebrating. Again, all over the social media. That's how we keep in touch with Roger. All over social media this week because it was the anniversary of you being stuck on Lakeshore Drive in one of the dumbest traffic moves in the history of traffic.
Yeah.
During the blizzard of, I couldn't believe it was 2011?
Yeah.
The blizzard?
Yeah, can you? It's
no, amazing. I can't believe it. It's time goes too fast.
Yeah.
But yes, so this was, I saw the pictures. I remember getting in a lot of trouble because I teased you about it after we realized you were alive and we were back on the air a couple weeks later. People were all upset. How dare you tease Roger? He could have died. I go, but he didn't die.
No.
And he's here. I'm looking at him.
I'm too ornery to have something like that happen to me.
So you did you do anything exciting? for your Blizzard or your Blizzardversary?
Yeah, I damaged my new car.
Perfect. Would you slide in today? Slide
yesterday,
on the ice?
Last night, coming into work, I was trying to back it into a very confined space.
Why?
That I thought I had, so that I could pull out into the alley to get to work, and apparently I had too many things to look at the same split second that a human being is able to look at.
Huh? So yeah, that's a fancy ride you got. It doesn't have one of those rear view cameras?
Yeah, it does, but I wasn't just looking at that. I was looking on the left side and I was looking on the right side, and I had to make sure we have a dumpster that juts out behind my parking space. So instead of being able to pull straight back into the alley, I have to kind of pull back and to the left and kind of ease the car back that way without hitting the front. Well, I had the space made going back, and I thought I was going to hit the front. So I adjusted real quickly and didn't look back quick enough, and crunch.
Oh, man. That's no good. Can I ask a stupid question? Can you push the dumpster out of the
way? It's behind a fence. There's a solid fence right there.
And it juts out? There's nobody you can call about that? That doesn't seem right.
No, because there's no other place to put the dumpster. We're right butting up on the property next to us. It's out in the alley area.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It's the biggest parking spot in our parking lot. Because we have more room on both sides of the car as opposed to the other cars.
Doesn't sound
except for there.
For right there.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem with trying to back into a spot.
Yeah.
Too much to look for.
Yeah. And then the
well, I'm sorry you damaged your vehicle.
The guy who was parked in the alley, who shouldn't have been there.
Uh-oh.
As soon as they heard a crunching sound, they took off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So then, of course, within a split second, I had all the space in the world.
Sure. Now you look like just a dork who can't park.
More so than usual.
All right. Well, we're glad you're here. Sorry you hurt your car.
That's all right.
I had to let out a profanity today. I didn't mean to. We're going to get to the Twitter thing.
Okay.
But since you brought up somebody parked in the alley.
Yeah.
So I go to pull the car out of the garage into the alley today.
Uh-huh.
And I open the big garage door, and there's a rental truck sitting right out in front blogging. I'm like, and I just said the S word, kind of to myself, but kind of out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was going to go across the alley to my neighbor and see if they were in there. And they must have heard me swear. And I heard this disembodied voice go, "I'm moving it." So I don't know if he heard me swear or just realized my garage door went up and I was going to have to get out. I'm going to err on the side of he probably just heard the garage door going up. Because I didn't bellow it. And above the clatter of the garage door going up, you probably didn't hear me.
Does it echo in your alley?
No, it's
okay. It echoes in mine.
What do I live in a canyon?
Well, no, it echoes in mine because of the buildings that butt up against the alley, so it echoes back and forth.
No, I just have like regular small single family houses.
Oh, okay, all right. There's a lot of backyards and stuff. Yeah, okay.
All right. A lot of news this week about people buying Twitter followers.
Yeah,
and a local personality, Richard Roper, who you hear on Ro Khan's show all the time. He writes for the Sun-Times, does a wonderful job. He was caught up in this conversation, and he was not the only one. New York Times investigation said that a lot of athletes, celebrities, influencers, a lot of people are buying Twitter followers because, you know, and listen, I'm active on Twitter. Cody's very active on Twitter. Even during my program, he's very active tweeting things for other
Pay attention,
programs.
Cody.
So there's a lot of people on Twitter. I don't have anything against Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the success of your Twitter account is in many ways judged by how many followers you have.
Mm-hmm.
The more followers you have, the more influence you are perceived to have, the more that then feeds in more people following you. You get verified. You get that nice blue check mark, which is always exciting to get. So there's been a lot of conversation this week about what's the big deal about buying Twitter followers. What's the big deal about representing yourself as maybe having a little more influence than you actually do? Is it a sin? If you follow any of the newspaper reports and media reports you saw, and I'm not speaking out of school, it's public. Richard Roper was initially suspended by the Sun-Times until they could do their own investigation. Subsequently, he is back writing his movie and TV reviews for the Sun-Times. He has gotten rid of his old Twitter account and started a new Twitter account. The Sun-Times has
said that, listen, we're telling all of our people not to, that you cannot buy Twitter followers. There was an interesting piece by Eric Zorn the other day where he discussed it, trying to decide. And he, you know, he said he talked to people and some people thought it was a big deal, a breach of trust. Some people didn't care at all about it. It's not a big deal. I'm somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's an offense where you, I don't think you should, anybody should lose their job over it. I don't think it's one of these things that it casts a huge, there's no moral outrage on my part. There's no disappointment. But I can see where people would say, well, it is in a way a breach of trust. Because if I follow somebody based on how many followers they have, if I'm looking, let's say I'm looking for somebody who tweets about, let's use Cody as an example. Cody tweets a lot about his video games and video game podcasts, mm-hmm. along with other things that he tweets about, funny stuff, things like that, his retweets. And I see, holy cow, this guy who tweets about video games has, I don't know, what do you got, 10, 12 followers?
I've got about 4,000 followers.
4,000 followers. That's a pretty good number.
Yeah.
So I say, hey, he must know what he's talking about, because why would all these people follow him to learn about video games if he didn't have, you know, if he didn't know what he was talking about? Well, if I came to find out that Cody had 112 followers, legit, and had bought the other, you know, 3,900 followers, suddenly I don't trust him as much. And yeah, I could just unfollow him. He hasn't really done anything to harm me, so it's no big deal.
Right.
You know, just unfollow people if that's the way. But, you know, to me it just seems unseemly. And yes, I want people to follow me on Twitter. But I don't understand, and maybe that's a problem, that I don't understand the impetus to try to buy followers to bolster my numbers, because I would want my numbers to be genuine. And I don't know, I guess there are algorithms. I could check and see if some of my followers are fake. Maybe a bot or two follows me, but I didn't buy them. I didn't solicit them.
Right.
And granted, I don't have a ton of followers. I don't know what I got. What do I have, Cody? You have access to my account.
You've got about 3,000.
You haven't bought any followers for me. It's not going to come out where I'm doing this whole thing and then it comes out that you bought followers for the show account, have you?
No, I've been there, done that. You've got 2,800 followers.
All right. Not a lot. You know?
Decent amount. That's good.
That's all right. You know, whatever. It is what those 2,800 followed me organically.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm good with that. And I'm not overly active on the platform. So while I don't understand the need to do it, I am not morally outraged. And I think if I found out that somebody was doing it, like I said, I would just unfollow them. It's not the biggest sin in the world. It's not a fireable offense. It's not an offense that should cast aspersions on someone's character for the rest of their lives. It's just not something I would do and something I don't understand. But, yes.
I was just going to say.
I know you were.
I appreciate that. In some cases, that it would be of concern. For example, and I can understand in the Roper case, he is in the news media, though he is not.
I understand, and I'm not.
He's not a news reporter
right.
That must deal in facts and report those facts, and the public depends on those facts in order to be well informed. He is not that. He is a columnist. He does reviews, he expresses his opinions, he critiques things. It is not straight news.
Right.
Therefore, it's not a big deal, but if he was a news
Anyone who is looked upon
as a straight news person, one who deals in the facts on a daily basis, and it comes out that they have been buying followers to improve their negotiating position for a contract, to aid them in convincing their bosses that they have a lot of followers and viewers or listeners.
Well, sure, that's an issue.
That's a major issue.
All right, let's take a quick break. And I know I brought this up, one, because I thought it was interesting this week, and two, because I know anytime we delve into social media, my friend and yours, Cody, has strong opinions on this. And so I thought to myself, well, this I got to hear what he has to say, because I know how I feel about it, as I told you.
But I have a feeling. I just have a feeling that we might get another side and some lively conversation. You are always welcome to jump in. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you can get involved. How big a sin is it to buy Twitter followers? That's the question. What's your answer? WGN. Text line saying it is very unethical for people to buy Twitter followers. They don't like it. I don't, you know, unsavory, maybe. Disingenuous, yes, to me. Unethical, that's a little far. That's again, a little much. I have no moral outrage. I just think if I found out that somebody I thought was an expert or an influencer, as social media likes to say, if I found out, and going back to the Roper case, very, very small amount of his followers were purchased. The vast majority were earned the regular way. And I think that's the same with a lot of the accounts. So this isn't about, this is on a very small local scale, it was a Richard Roper involvement. But this is a big story by the New York Times, so it's not, we're not focusing on one person. So I don't think it's an offense that's worthy of anything more than unfollowing someone if you find that offensive. There's no, you know, this is not high crimes and misdemeanors. You're not violating the public trust. You're just trying to get one over on people, and you got caught. So, all right, it's Twitter, for God's sakes. Cody, I know you have thoughts on this.
It's not that effective, is the thing.
Really?
I did this a couple years, probably, after I joined the show.
Right.
So a few years, probably 2011, maybe 2012 at the latest. I bought some Twitter followers because I was
really?
Like, oh, if I've got a bunch of Twitter followers, people will follow me. Because I was a producer, I was new.
Sure.
I had a few hundred, maybe 700 or 800 organically. I bought 10,000 Twitter followers.
Wow.
At the time, it cost like $20 or something. It wasn't much.
10,000 seems exorbitant.
Yeah, so I had 10,000 followers, which was fun because, you know, that it looks like you're cool.
Yeah, but it does.
I didn't get any new followers from that. Like, I bought the 10,000, then you can see when someone follows you. It's not like people started swarming to me and saying, oh, man, that Cody guy's got 10,000 followers. I trust him.
Right.
Like, no one followed me. It didn't help. And then Twitter eventually shut down all those fake accounts a few years later. So it ended up being completely for nothing. So it's not an effective strategy. But the second component of this is that a huge majority of activity on Twitter is completely disingenuous.
Oh, most of it is.
But by disingenuous, I mean disingenuous, sure. I mean either completely automated or run by somebody else or scheduled. Like an astute listener just called me out for tweeting about my video game podcast an hour ago. During the Brian Noonan show.
I noticed.
Well, that tweet was scheduled in a pre-existing library of tweets that I have on a rotation that are tweeted out and the timing is based on an algorithm of a third-party platform that I use. I tell it, like, hey, here's a promotion for my podcast. Can you send this out, like,
right,
when it would be a good time and people would see it? And it just happens. Like, I didn't even know I tweeted that until she alerted me.
I knew it. I saw it when it came out. But one of my old jobs, I was in charge of the Twitter account, and I would use schedulers. But, you know, I kind of set the time, because you can do it both ways. You can set specific times, or you could do it your way, where it's random based on their algorithms. So I understand that. And yes, I would imagine at some point, a lot of the much bigger accounts, they're, you know, corporate accounts, you know, John Pepsi is not the one running his Twitter account.
Right.
So, you know, corporations have whole departments that deal with that. How many times do we see bad tweets go out and they blame some minion in our social media? Our social media intern was supposed to be handling this and they screwed up and now we've killed them.
And beyond that, just so much of the activity is fake. So I'm looking at...
But let me ask you this then. Because to my point about the perception of you as an influencer, not you personally, but anybody with... let's take a Kardashian, because everybody likes that. Nobody's going to get offended if we make fun of the Kardashians. However many Twitter followers Kim Kardashian has, that gives a certain cachet. If I wonder how many of her followers, if it was found that she had bought 25% or half her followers, is it a big deal?
I think it's a big deal
because
on her part, and just like other people who are trying to get jobs, part of why advertisers flock to certain celebrities on social media is because of their Twitter following.
Yes.
Or their Instagram following.
Yes.
If then you have shown that you have bought all these followers, have you not then lied to your employer, basically?
Yeah, and I think that is where the line is drawn. And I've used automated services, not buying followers, but automated services to help my tweets and Instagram posts appear to actual humans and get right in their timelines. Nothing artificial,
unsavory,
growing my following, just different services, again, like schedulers.
They will send your tweets to other people who aren't following you?
Yeah, kind of. I won't get into the nitty-gritty, but basically it will help more people see my stuff, which then in turn will prompt them to maybe look at my timeline, and if they like what I'm tweeting, then they'll follow me. But that's an action they're taking. But I've done services like this in order to grow my Instagram and Twitter following over time, because I know that if I've got 80,000 social media followers, I mean, I've seen casting calls. I've seen dozens of casting calls. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've checked a lot lately, but like, there are casting calls that say, looking for a minor role in this web production, must have at least 150,000 followers on social media. Or casting agencies are actually casting roles in TV shows. I mean, these reality shows.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got several thousand followers, forget about it. If you don't, then forget about it. But if you do.
But again, if you're cast in a production and you say, I have 150,000 Twitter followers, and 75,000 of those were purchased.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You're
a liar. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying is I've made a concerted effort to grow because I know it could help me in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to buy fake accounts because that's like lying in your resume.
Right.
That's not okay.
Yeah, and it's going to backfire at some point.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of these services that are good to use. But if you're now that said, Roper, right, is. I mean, he worked with Roger Ebert, who's one of the greatest film critics ever. So it's like, this guy's reputation, I don't think, is hinging on how many Twitter followers does this guy have. I would imagine it would hinge on, he's worked with one of the most well-respected film critics in modern history.
And he's been a writer at the Sun-Times forever. I mean, he's got a reputation, but in this day and age, you're also, no matter who you are, you're selling yourself, with that's an aspect of what you do to... You know, get a job or renegotiate or whatever.
I can see. I just think in this case, it's just not directly relevant to his work as much as everything else, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's we will see. I'm interested. I'll have to talk to you more about that, not buying followers.
Not buying, but the other services.
But yeah, where you send it out so people just see it.
Yeah.
What do you know about that?
I mean, there's bots that'll have you automatically like or retweet or follow things. I mean, I'm looking at a guy who follows
you. How can I get completely followed by Russians? Is there a bot for that?
Oh, probably. Right, I'm looking at a guy who follows you right now. I'm just going to say this. He's following, he's got 8,500 followers. That's good. He's following 22,500 accounts.
That's too many.
That means that he's using a service that's automatically following people in the hopes that they follow him back.
And he's not then deleting or unfollowing.
Yeah, for context, for non-Twitter users, usually I think 3,000 to 6,000 people to follow, I think that's pretty reasonable. You can follow several thousand and more or less keep on top. But once you get above 20,000 people you're following, I mean, that's like hundreds of tweets a second. That's stupid. So so clearly this is fake. But I'm not going to look at him and be like, oh, I'm going to hire this guy. You know. So just always do your research. Look at the context. And at the end of the day, if you like their content, follow them. If you don't, then don't.
Right on. Because content is king.
Sure it is.
Which is why I have saved some content for only Roger, for when Roger was here. After the news. Oh, my goodness. Teachers in the news. Schools in the news. Troubling. Troubling. We'll do that after we do this on WGN.
So wind chill tomorrow, 12? -12?
Minus 12.
Did you say, was there a county in Illinois that you did not mention?
A few downstate where
Indiana?
It's probably only
or
zero.
Or southeast Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Southeast Michigan?
I could add
Southwest
a few.
Southwest Michigan? No, don't. I don't need any more of this.
I could add Wisconsin. They actually have a...
Don't.
Listen,
I am so... I'm done. I'm done with winter.
With winter,
I'm done.
I know.
I'm done.
Me too.
I'm finished.
Yeah.
I'm an old man. I don't need this anymore. I've had it.
Let's go on tour. Let's take the show on the road.
Cody's very... Yeah, listen, trust me.
If they'd let us broadcast from somewhere warm, we'd be there in a second. A heartbeat.
We can go with Sammy out to Vegas for a while.
Now, well, you got some. You still got some connections out there, don't you?
Yeah.
Sure, we could go to Vegas. We could do the show from Vegas Sunday afternoon in Vegas.
Ooh.
We're just sitting around somewhere in a cabana.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fun.
Yeah,
it'd be fun. We get some. We get like Siegfried to come on as a guest. Maybe a Penn Jillette.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the new magician Sammy was talking about. Get a, you know, all kind of big names.
Sure.
Get a dancing bear in there. You know, some Elvis impersonator. Cody? I'm not going to put Cody on it. He didn't deliver the puppies for the Puppy Bowl.
Oh.
For our own Puppy Bowl this
again?
Week. Nope.
Jeez.
Fell short.
He was busy getting followers.
Right, he's too busy buying Twitter followers. Yeah, That's the problem with Cody.
Yes.
He's tweeting out more stuff. Kids constantly tweeting during the show. Constantly.
Yep.
It's all about it.
That's what I'm doing in here.
All about it.
The whole world is complaining, at least all my 10,000 followers.
You got 10,000 now?
10,000. Wow. Just got them within the past half. I follow those tips, and I just got them.
Sure. I'm going to tweet a selfie just for that.
Here, tweet a selfie of this.
Yeah.
Is that appropriate for radio?
It's not, forgetting that I'm in the a complete glass booth.
Yeah, right.
Nobody's walking by. It's freezing. For those of you keeping track, it has gone up 7 degrees in the Allstate Showcase studio since I complained about it last time.
Wow. Yeah, it was chilly last night when I went in.
Yeah, it was 66 in here earlier. Now it's 73.
Ooh.
So that's nice.
All right.
That's comfortable.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
aren't they supposed to keep it like it's 70, 72, something like that? Is the ultimate the?
I don't know. I never turn my house up past 70, but that's me.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's a small place.
Well, you're paying the bills there.
Right.
So, yeah.
Here I want it cranked up. If I could do the show in just a tank top and culottes, I'd be fine.
What a vision.
That's right.
Well, you're not wearing pants.
Well, that's one reason I'm so cold.
Typical.
But.
As usual.
Well, sure. Why should I be constricted during my broadcast?
Mm-hmm.
I need to be free thinking. And free everything else. It's all free. Freedom. Freedom of the pants. Isn't that one of the rights we fight for?
Freedom of the pants. Freedom of the pants. First Amendment.
I thought it was the First Amendment, but maybe I wasn't. All right, I've been saving this till Roger got here. We've got a few stories, and we have a musical accompaniment. We have a musical accompaniment. I thought we were going to the chorus.
This isn't the chorus?
No, this is not the chorus. And that's why I put the time on there.
Oh.
On the email, I said, started at this time.
You did that.
Oh. Unbelievable. There we go. That's kind of where I wanted it to start. Honest to God. You're lucky I like you.
Look, of all the things that have gone wrong tonight, that's the one thing that's been my fault. Hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't blame you for the computer
stuff.
No, I don't blame you for that. This was 100% on you.
I agree. I'm just saying, one mistake for a four-hour show, not that bad. I'm doing a lot in here. I'm like getting our podcast ready.
Right, you're tweeting. You're buying followers. You're commuting. You got a lot going on. I understand it, and I don't mean to get in the way.
I'm not even watching the Super Bowl. It's on. I haven't watched a single play.
It's 15-6. Philadelphia.
I don't even know what their team is.
Well, the Philadelphia Eagles.
They're Eagles, like the bird.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And the Patriots.
All right.
You know, like Patriots.
Why
all
are
right.
they so patriotic?
So here's this is the first teacher story. A lot of educational news, and not all good. Here's the headline. Teacher suspended for allegedly assaulting student who refused to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Exciting. Now, as a man who's in schools all the time with children, sometimes you have to remind kindergarten and first graders to stand up and, you know, because it's pledge time. And they still do the pledge every morning, which I'm a fan of. But this is a high school teacher. She's a phys ed teacher as well. She assaulted a student for not standing during the Pledge of Allegiance. I know Roger used to do that all the time. I save this for you, Roger, because I know you would have thoughts. The teacher has been placed on paid administrative leave from a middle school in Lafayette, Colorado. The police commander said that detectives are looking into exactly what kind of actions Smith took to force the child, a male student, to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Of course, the principal sent a letter to parents. He said, we will have substitute teacher working with some of our PE classes for the time being. While I cannot share much information following an incident in school today, Ms. Smith was placed on paid administrative leave. We're working closely with our partners at the Lafayette Police Department. We believe in due process and therefore ask that everyone respect Ms. Smith's privacy at this time. Happened about noon on Tuesday. Why are they doing the Pledge of Allegiance at noon on Tuesday? Unless they do it at every class. That seems excessive.
Well, I know that.
I also know Colorado is in a different time zone, but it's only an hour difference.
I do know that at one school that I was subbing at before I got my job back at the other school, they did it at the beginning of third period.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
It was not
sure
quite homeroom. It was like you had it was a regular class that you were in, like math, science, English, whatever. But there was like an extra 10 minutes on the class time for you to do the Pledge of Allegiance, to do daily bulletin announcements, and some other housekeeping stuff.
At the grade schools I'm at, it's all first thing in the morning.
Right, and that's fine. Most schools are like that do that. Not all schools required to do the Pledge of Allegiance. I know I've worked at schools where there was a separate 15-minute class that was, homeroom. No, you could call it homeroom. You could call it
like a prep period.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'd go over the announcements. Especially if you've got seniors in the group, you go over college applications. You go over FAFSA stuff.
Well, these kids at this school have a choice. They can decide if they want to sit or stand for the pledge, which makes the teacher's actions. And again, because parents are saying this is all overblown.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the students have said that, you know, this teacher is strict, but they've never done anything out of hand. So it could be just a fact of, you know, tapping a kid on the shoulder, hey, stand up.
Right.
It could be something as minor as that. It could be putting your hand under somebody's arm and kind of urging them to get up,
mm-hmm.
which, again, if the kids have the choice to sit down.
Why are you doing that?
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
Unless you're, you know, a gym teacher who is, you know, America, we're standing. Well,
but you don't have that right as a teacher.
I understand you don't have that right. I didn't say she was right. I'm saying I'm trying to figure out why you would do that.
Yeah.
It's if you have that strong a feeling about the pledge, which I think you should stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, but because again, we'll get, and this has nothing to do with the national anthem at a football game. I'm not a kid. If you're a first, second grader, you stand up for the pledge. When you're old enough to have social consciousness, then you can make,
you can make your own decision. Right.
But when you're a little kid, and even in middle school, stand up. You know? It's not, they're not just making you say a prayer. They're making you pledge allegiance to the flag. And I'm not, you know, adults can argue that point. Children cannot argue that point. You know?
Well, here's the basic rule of law. In the classroom, and you know this.
Yes.
You don't touch a child.
No, never.
No matter how old. Even if two kids are starting to go at it, you do not grab one of the other kids to pull them away. You could try to insert yourself and try to spread your arms out to keep them apart, but we have been taught in school that you do not, you leave that up to security, and even security.
Well, that's
is
see,
told
that's,
not to touch
but
the
that's,
kids.
That's also public high schools. There's a there.
Right.
I think a good rule of thumb is to never touch the kid. But I know I've watched in the schools that I've been in. There's times where if a kid is doing something, a teacher will guide it with a hand on the shoulder or a hand on the arm. It's not striking or hitting. There's no real pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It's guiding a body to another. To another thing. I've also seen where social workers have had to literally pick up a child who is having a violent tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a whole different thing.
Yeah, it is. And a social worker who meets one-on-one with the
right,
students.
And if I'm also, if I see two kids in a fight, I'm going to insert myself and move them apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there may be an issue with that down the line. I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, most teachers are never going to touch a kid. It's even weird when they want to, you know, they want to hug you as little kids.
Oh,
little kids love to hug.
No.
See, but you say that because you taught high school and it's different. Try teaching kindergarten or preschool or first grade where the kids they want to run up and give you a hug.
They have more of an attachment to their teacher
exactly.
in school because
it's
they spend so many hours,
thing.
So much time with you.
Whole different
yeah.
thing. So that's, you know, but again, you're a middle school phys ed teacher. I've sub middle school phys ed. There's no reason yeah. to try to, you know.
Especially if that school says you have the option.
Yeah, which, again, I find odd, because I don't think at 12 you have a strong social consciousness.
Well, I know a lot of kids around that. Oh, yeah. They've formed, through whatever means, they have formed very specific opinions about socially conscious things.
Okay.
Now, whether impugned on them by their parents.
A sixth grader
or by,
is like 11.
All right. This is middle school. Middle school is 6th, 7th, and 8th grade.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I had a lot of opinions in middle school. We called it junior high. I had a lot of very strong opinions then.
Sure.
I was old enough to think for myself.
Well, yeah, but all right. But I think in a school situation, social activism needs to be reined in a little bit.
Oh, you sound like Vince McMahon announcing the XFL rules.
No. If you
people are here to go to class, not to be social.
Dad, listen. Football and education are 180 degrees.
Are they?
So I am not going to take that comparison at all. There are different rules when you're in grade school and middle school than there are when you're in high school or when you're in college or when you're a professional football player.
Mm.
Or when you work at a company that says these are the rules of this company. You know? That's sometimes you got to follow the rules. Now this school didn't have any rules for this, so I don't get what the teacher is up to. I don't understand the move. You know, if you tell the kids you can do it, well then let them sit down. What are you gonna do? Was he sitting on one of your volleyballs, deflating it, and it got you upset? So that was it. All right, we got a couple more. This one, oh man, this one I love. But we got to do this first. And then we will take a math question that got a certain high school teacher in a lot of hot water. You taught high school, Roger. You didn't teach math, though. I hated math. Still do. Not a math. I know math teachers are going to be mad at me. I can teach young children math, but I don't enjoy it.
I hate the Pledge of Allegiance.
Do you really? Why do you hate the Pledge of Allegiance?
It's poorly written. I pledge allegiance to a flag. That's stupid. Flags mean something different to everybody.
To the republic for which it stands.
Yeah. No. The flag, no. Not a flag.
What it represents.
You want to know what it should say? I pledge allegiance to the people of the United States of America, because they're your fellow citizens.
Or you could just pledge allegiance to the United States of America.
No, pledge allegiance. You have to explicitly spell it out, because people are stupid and they don't understand what the flag represents. And
I was like, oh, Cody's gone.
Some people think the flag represents their buddies that look and talk like them. Some people think it represents other things.
It represents the entire country.
Well, that's what you and I say.
For liberty and justice, and liberty and justice for all.
I think it needs to be more explicit.
Really?
I think that we need to encourage...
Hashtag rewrite the pledge.
We should.
Rewrite the pledge.
Encourage people to watch out for each other explicitly in black and white, and people will maybe get along better.
Do you think that's going to help if we explicitly tell people, listen, we're all in this together, you need, because we've been saying that for how long? You know?
No, we haven't, though.
Are you sure? I think the message has been there. I think people have chosen to ignore it.
I don't think the message has been clear enough. I think it's different psychologically to say, like, literally, I have allegiance to my fellow
I pledge allegiance
human.
To Americans.
Because flag, you can, I mean, politicians use that.
Oh, sure, the flag, you can wrap yourself in the flag for any number of reasons.
Exactly. So, all right. That's all I'm saying.
All right, hashtag rewrite the pledge.
Obviously, I love America.
Let's do it. Start it.
I love Americans. I just think that it needs to a rewrite.
All right.
Someone,
updated.
Yeah.
Reboot.
Yeah.
A sequel. all of the above. All right.
Wouldn't that take a constitutional amendment?
No, I don't think so. I don't believe that's true.
I don't think it's part of the... No,
Cody, do me a favor. Check all your Twitter followers. See if they've started using hashtag rewrite the pledge yet.
It'll take him a while. He's got 100 million of them.
Yeah, the fake ones or the real ones?
Just all of them. All the fake ones.
Oh, man.
All right, so a high school teacher downstate has made a reference to drugs in his math questions. Did you see this story? Roxanna Senior High School, this teacher was doing a lesson. He asked students how high they would be 3 hours after using cocaine and how much they would owe a dealer for a $1,000 payment, paid at only 25% a day for a year. You ever do anything like that, Roger?
No.
In your broadcasting classes?
No.
If you wanted to go into broadcasting, how high would you be?
No.
No?
No.
All right.
I mean, there was a section I used to teach about the management of broadcasting and money made through sales, but I didn't. do any of that stuff.
All right. Well, teachers and students were shocked, as you can imagine, once somebody saw this. One parent looked at the photo and said, wow, that's a school math problem? So... yes. One student was like, wow, really? So, of course, the school sent out a letter, a following statement. Unfortunately, student welfare is always the priority. I'll cut some of this out. Unfortunately, unacceptable examples were used in a high school math class, causing some parents and students distress. Yeah, why would you? Listen, I understand. I know teaching is hard. I know it. It's a hard profession. If you've dedicated your life to it, you're a noble human being. But at some point, don't you go, oh boy, I probably shouldn't do this. Or is it just every once in a while people make a mistake? You know? You just go, all right, I screwed up. You know?
Mm-hmm.
The faculty member has apologized to students and parents for the lapse in judgment and has reiterated his intent to never promote or make light of illicit drug use. The district is taking the necessary measures to ensure that the damage is repaired. Well, all right, let's also say, how much damage really is there? Not much. Could this be a teachable moment? Of course it could.
Sure.
Parents could use it as a teachable moment, once again, to, you know, preach about the evils of drug use. That would be fine. The teacher can, you know, the teacher has apologized. Okay. You know, I showed bad judgment. See, kids, sometimes even grown-ups can make a mistake. We have bad judgments. We do things we shouldn't, and then we take responsibility for them and we face the music. It was one math question or one math lesson. It was not an entire year's curriculum. He wasn't, I don't think he belittled any group. Was it right? No, it was really, really stupid. Really stupid. But
now that will come up in their
review.
Evaluations
and stuff. But all right, it doesn't say how long this teacher has been with the district.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say for sake of argument, 5 years. All right. And again, okay. I don't know exactly how long. 5 years. You lead a stellar career for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you coach one of the teams or you moderate the chess club, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You do some extra, because most teachers have to do a little something extra.
Sure.
You've done real well. Your kids are testing at or above grade level.
Mm-hmm.
Things seem good, all right? You make one mistake like this. How much does it really impact your career?
No.
I don't think it should.
Well, depending on who your boss is, depending on who the principal is, it could impact it tremendously or not at all.
Yeah?
Yeah, seriously. It depends.
Well, if there is any
pushback from parents. If the pushback is loud enough and big enough, then there will be consequences for that teacher.
Yeah, it just seems, again, when you have to look at how much damage was there really to the students. Well, how do you judge that?
Well, you go, again,
one kid
by
was strong, one kid was, well, listen, you,
reactions.
Yes, but you, come on, you've,
no,
been,
I'm serious.
You've been, I know, but you've also been in the school system. You know that reactions are often way overblown.
Yeah, most of them are, yeah.
Yes. So, all right, guy makes one, listen, he didn't falsify test results.
No.
He didn't do anything to, harm a student.
No.
He didn't.
His
choice of example on a math problem.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't bring in, an eight ball and chop it up and go, all right, what's the fraction of this eight ball that I can sell to this guy at this amount of money? You know, how much can I make of a profit? Here's my wholesale price. What can I make reading? He didn't do that.
No.
He didn't carry it out. I guess asking a high school kid how high they'd be. We can all agree, inappropriate.
Yeah.
But, come on, let's not get crazy. Let's not do anything nuts. Here's one that's even better. Here's one for you. Austin, Texas. Kid at a middle school paid a stripper to come to school. That's right. It sounds like my academic career.
Wow.
A student at a middle school paid a stripper to visit campus on Thursday, according to school administrators. The woman went to the provided address. She arrived and discovered it was a middle school. So she called the front office and explained why she was there. They, of course, did not let her in. Turns out a kid had had a cell phone in school, stolen his parents' credit card, and decided he was going to order a stripper for show and tell.
Oh, jeez.
I will say, having sat through a couple show and tells recently,
mm-hmm.
this would have been more exciting than, you know, hey, look, I brought this kid the other day brought a Rubik's Cube.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Another kid brought some, you know, a Transformer.
Right.
You know, a car that turned into a robot. I'm like, oh, I'm boring. If some kid had walked in with, this is Crystal. She dances down at Club of Go-Go.
Yeah.
Check her out. Check out her pole work. She's fantastic. Suddenly, Mr. Noonan is paying attention. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right.
Yeah.
The education system, not what it used to be, Roger.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we got to take a quick 19-second break. Then we're going to say hello to Karen Conti, who has her program coming up momentarily. All right, we'll do that after this, WGN.
Washington insider A.B. Stoddard will be here to talk about the fallout from the memo.
And anything can happen when Bob Saget hits the Showcase studio.
And it has.
He'll be here at 4:40.
The Rokan Show with Anna Devlantis. Tomorrow afternoon at 3 on 720 WGN.
All right, that's it. That's it for us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of the program. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks because I will not be here next Sunday. However, Karen Conti has walked into the room. She is here tonight, as she is Sundays now from 7 to 9 in her new broadcast. And I must say, happy birthday.
Well,
yesterday was your birthday.
364 shopping days left till the next one.
That's right. Now, I hope I'm not out of line telling people if you turn 35, which is phenomenal. You have had quite a career in your short amount of time. So did you do anything fun to celebrate?
You know what? We really didn't. You know,
no?
just a little hanging out, shopping, a nice dinner, you know.
That sounds
just
good.
You know, you can't really do that much when the weather is this bad.
Listen, this was a time that I missed the fact that we do not get to do a show together. I saw a story today and immediately thought, oh, I got to talk to Karen about this. And then I realized, oh, yeah, she's got her own show.
This
now.
Breaking
she
up is hard to do.
It is. Did you see that the ACLU is filing suit against Indiana State Police because a guy flipped off the trooper? Are you
going to
talk about that?
Talking about
perfect.
It.
Great
yes.
minds think alike.
Oh, yes.
What else is on the show?
Oh, just the usual. We're going to talk.
Just the usual, you know.
You know, Monday,
law
is,
stuff.
Monday is Weatherman's Day, and I'm going to have
is.
Mark Strahl from Fox, one of my favorite people in the world. He's going to come in. We're going to talk about being a weatherman and what it's really like.
Nice. Very good.
And then some legal stories and taking calls at 8 o'clock, of course, all the legal calls, and that's about it.
Perfect. Well, happy birthday again.
Thank
have
you,
a wonderful
appreciate
show.
Appreciate it.
We will see you later, and we'll talk to you guys in a little while. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Pearl Mortgage, 7 o'clock. Roger Badish.
Sure.